management here at the Chalmers campus, and different folks will also come in. Matt Beaton is with Nelson Partners and has been our architect and has done an incredible job helping to kind of envision what Chalmers is becoming. And so he'll add a lot of interesting side notes and tidbits about what you're actually seeing. So, Anne, I'll turn it over to you.
Welcome, everybody. We are really, really excited to show off Chalmers East. DeMarlon and I will tag team a little bit, and he's going to do a deeper presentation for you all in the actual board meeting, give you some demographics and some statistics. But right now, we just want to show you this beautiful space. So, DeMarlon, can you talk a little bit? We'll start right here in the community room. What do we use this area for?
Well, the community room, of course, is for the resident use for different programs. We also have different organizations that come in and offer services to the residents, and then the Boys and Girls Club come and share the space as well when they're needing it.
All right, well, let's get started. We're going to head this way. You'll follow me.
Feel free to grab, if you want something to drink for the walk, help yourself, and then we'll...
And I'm relying on you guys to ask questions, because we want to hear your questions.
Oh, are you looking at my Here to call the order, the meeting of the housing, the Board of Commissioners for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, and the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So I will ask Mr. Gerber to call the roll so we can establish a quorum.
Commissioner Bailey, Commissioner Duncan Hall,
present.
Commissioner Carrington,
present.
Commissioner Apostolo,
present.
Chairman Ritchie,
present.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum, so we're officially called to order at 2:15 p.m. And so at this time, we've taken a tour of the property, and what I'd like to do is acknowledge those individuals who are involved with the planning, construction, and management and oversight of the property. It is very beautiful. And so let me call Will Henderson and Ben Smith. Would you take a seat? And then if I could, let me ask you to have all members of your company stand up there so we can see everybody.
Absolutely. And we did lose two of the gentlemen you saw on the tour. Ross Libram, he's our project manager he's overseeing all of the properties, and Paul Martinez is his superintendent. They were walking along with us as well. Hope you had a chance to meet with them. They answered some questions. They had pressing business across the way there, especially since I told them they had to be done. So they said, we're going to get back to work. And then DeMarlon Nixon is our manager here. DeMarlon, do you want to introduce your team and your folks on site?
I'm Ben Smith. I'm with Carlton as well. But we got Marlon Nixon. He's the main here for these projects. Seems like, and then we got just right here is our maintenance, Raul Marquez. And then we have Evelyn Cruz and Alina Casanova, who just changed her name on me a couple weeks ago. We're real happy that we're a part of this project. I got thrown in it towards the end of South, and it's been real fun. It really has. So the property's real challenging, as with all the layers that it has. So it makes it even more of a blast to, you know, kind of figure out and things on a constant basis as it changes. So but we're real happy to be a part of this project for sure.
And DeMarlon specifically has been with us since the beginning over there, and Elise up here, and I'm happy to say he's going to be with us to lead the charge as we move across the street here.
If you want to come behind me, and if you all can come together so Kay can get a photo of you guys.
Everybody say hi, Francis.
And 3, 2, 1.
Thanks,
so. I'm going to start to my right, and Commissioner Apostolo, if you want to have a few words. So you all just stand there for a second, because I'm going to let each board member have an opportunity to comment. So if you want to say
a comment of the property itself? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. I've been in 1 and 2 bedroom apartments here. I have friends that were west. So, I mean, all I hear is how much they love it. So it's been an experience for them, too. Like my experience was when I first entered my apartment. So I'm very happy for them. They deserve it.
Thank you. Commissioner Carrington?
Thank you all very much. You do quality work, and we're pleased that you want to work with the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. And we hope there will be more.
Thank you.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Yeah, I actually said what I wanted to say about the quality of the work I saw, and I'm very, very pleased. Yesterday, I got my property tax assessment in the mail, and so I am actually looking for some place to live. And I think this would be a beautiful property to look at. Thank you so much for the great work.
Thank you.
Oh, one more thing.
Sure.
DeMarlon, you've been a great manager. You've been through a lot, and we really appreciate everything you do for us, south, east, west, whatever it's going to be. He's hung in there, and we appreciate him.
Mr. Gerber?
I would echo that. DeMarlon has been a wonderful manager and a constant and someone we've really enjoyed working with, and I'm so appreciative for his leadership at Chalmers South and, you know, executing that brilliantly, and then the challenges of Elise up here, really all of you, the way you've gelled together as a team, and it's really great to see. And I want to give a shout out also to Raul. I had the chance to meet Raul, you know, really kind of working on a little something. About 2 weeks ago, there was a small fire, you know, here, and, you know, being out here on a Sunday and caring for the residents, you didn't know who I was, you know, we didn't really know each other, and you know, watching you just sort of talk to residents and, you know, and just being out there when you didn't. You have to be on a Sunday afternoon, and the care you showed just meant a lot. And we've seen it in countless ways. We hear stories about, you know, people going to the leasing office and, you know, the care taken and the intersection with CVR that you all have been part of. And so I just want to say, you know, thanks. You're really setting the bar high for professionalism. And we want this to be an anchor for the broader community of how great affordable housing gets done. Because when we show the example of how great affordable housing happens, then more affordable housing gets built. And that's exactly what we, so what you do today has a direct bearing on our ability to move forward on Rosewood Courts. And what happens at Chalmers and Rosewood will have a bearing on our ability to partner on other projects as well. So thanks for setting the bar high. And changing your last name is a good thing. Congratulations. When did you get married?
We got married last June, but we're having our wedding next month.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks again to all of you. Congrats to the team.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just want to commend each and every one of you all for the different roles that you play. You've done a great job from the time the architectural plans were brought to us by Nelson, and then you all being able to execute and to build this development in a way that everybody is proud of it. I think, you know, a testament to that is the mayor told me how he is so proud of what our housing authority has done, and it's because of what you all do, that when he goes to the U.S. Conference of Mayors or the National League of Cities, that's the first thing he starts talking about when somebody brings up housing. He talks about the housing authority, and that's very unusual for a mayor to talk about his housing or her housing authority because people have such a negative connotation. And you all have been a great partner in terms of helping changing the image of what subsidized public and affordable housing is in Austin, Texas. And that carries a big message because it helps people who hear that think differently about people in other parts of the country who live in affordable housing, thinking about what it could be, hearing about our story, what you're all able to do. So I think the University of Texas has some motto about what comes here changes the world, and you all have certainly helped us change the world, certainly the lives of the people who live here, because I know as I look at young folks who come in and out of this place, they see themselves just like their neighbors across the street. They don't see a difference in themselves, and when you can change somebody's frame of reference like that, their perspective, it helps them with their confidence. It helps them in terms of their ability to go be the best person they can do. And so while you all think you're just kind of managing a property or building a property, you really are changing people's lives. And so I can't say enough about how much I appreciate what you do. As someone who has grew up in public housing, this means a lot to me and to others. You know, so when Mary talks about how people feel, it's a really big deal. As I think about what's going to take place with Central Health moving in and building that health clinic, for me that is sort of the icing on the cake. It's something that I've dreamed about, wanted to have happen, because anytime you can put healthcare services close to people who lack transportation or who lack access, it makes a difference. And again, I'm somebody who is a testament of that. I didn't know I needed glasses until I was 16 because I never went to an optometrist. I failed my driver's exam because I didn't know I needed glasses. I couldn't pass the vision exam. I didn't go to a dentist until after I graduated from college, from graduate school, and I was 25 years old. Because when you live in public housing, when you're poor, healthcare is not something that you think of first about. You just deal with the pain and you make the best of it. And then also just having the Boys and Girl Scouts here, having communities and schools, all the enrichment we're able to provide these residents, it makes a difference. It makes a difference in terms of these kids going to school, getting a quality education, and trying to be just like you all. So you all are role models, and I just want to applaud you for all that you do, and just say we are grateful for the partnership. We're looking forward to the great things that are going to happen with Chalmers West. And please give my regards to my dear fraternity brother, Mr. Prentice.
Absolutely, I will do. And I want to just say thank you to you and your staff. And I'm really glad to hear what the mayor said, because you know, you all live here, so I don't know if this is the only housing authority you've ever been associated with, but you have a very professional, very forward-thinking, very well-organized housing authority compared to a lot that we work with. So I just want to make sure that I know the board, I mean, you see them every day, I know you know how great they are, but just by comparison, you do have a fantastic staff here. And to the staff here, I hope you know how supportive your board is. There are some boards who, you know, chair housing authorities that don't necessarily seem to have the same goals. So you all seem to be very much in lockstep, and a lot of things we're doing here are a little outside the box. You know, Chalmers South over there wouldn't exist if you hadn't made the decision to tear down two of your own buildings. So some of those kind of things that, you know, talk about how you do whatever it takes to make the visions happen, we really appreciate that. It's been our pleasure to work here, and I think we've got some exciting things going on across the street and then just up Tacoma a little bit, so I'm really looking forward to all those. And I just appreciate the opportunity and appreciate all the support that we get from the staff and the board here. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So while we're having this moment of kumbaya, which is always a good thing, Mr. Nixon, can I, you know, every property has its challenges, and this one, you know, I think we want to be really clear-eyed about this one as well. East Austin's having, as all parts of Austin are having, an uptick in crime. We've seen some crime at this property, and so DeMarlin, I know you and I have talked a little bit about that. Austin Moreno, who is new to the team, who had been our longtime APD liaison, has come on to our staff as our security director. Could you maybe share with the board for just a moment about how you're working to address crime at this property, and also to get residents to kind of take more ownership, building community, so that we're making it safer, better environment for, particularly for the kiddos and for our seniors and others who are more vulnerable.
Yeah, definitely being more visual, getting the residents involved. We've been working to make that to help the residents feel safe and comfortable with reporting any crime or trouble. Without feeling like there'll be any type of retaliation for them reporting. So we try to take the information as privately as possible. And we also have our cameras that help us visual with footage to be able to go back and look at whatever incidents happened. We also also been working with Officer Hank. He's been a pleasure so far helping us with that. And then also we put out notices to the residents, giving them reminders of different things to watch for. And then just, of course, trying to be that example within the whole body, just with everybody, trying to, keep everything good,
It's great to hear. How have the kids responded? There's been, in the last couple of months, we have had a couple of shootings, not necessarily at, of residents, but we've had, out on the street or nearby, enough to scare people. And how have kids responded? How have your work with the resident council,
Of course, it shakes up the atmosphere a bit when there's some type of crime in the area, especially when there's gunshots heard. Some of those things have been kind of in the area, maybe not directly associated to the property. There was a shooting recently where someone was on property at South that was shot. We didn't get any more details on that. And then also there was a little kid with a BB gun. But overall, just trying to reiterate to the residents, it is a safer environment, that we do need to report any type of activity that's strange or odd. Contacting APD when you're able to or when it's needed. Just kind of keep, hitting the brick with it.
Let me just say this. I think Sylvia is probably the only person in here other than myself that was at that board meeting, at least a, but I remember my very first board meeting of June 19th, 1997. And I hadn't had a chance to read the agenda because I literally had just got appointed the day before, went to City Hall that morning, got sworn in, and had this notebook. And one of the items was to purchase some playground equipment. And I remember our resident commissioner was opposed to it because she said if we put a picnic table out there in the community area, it's going to draw folks into the community to sell drugs there. And when I saw that picnic table out there, I thought, man, how times have changed. While, we still have crime, but the mere fact that the residents aren't opposed to having amenities and being able to use those amenities says a lot. So that simple, just seeing that picnic table out there, I mean, it said to me how things have changed, where we have come, and how we have progressed. And so, as a good friend of mine who's a assistant district attorney, every time I see him, I always say, how's it going? And he said, man, I'm always busy because criminals never stop. So I'm always busy. And so, crime will always be around us, but I'm glad when you just said it, but in terms of making our residents feel protected, feel secure, and feel safe.
Since we're surrounded by market-rate properties, for the most part, what are some of those properties doing to deter the crime? Because I'm sure it's not just our little area right here in Chalmers. It's this whole section of East Austin.
I would maybe interject before you then send it over to you guys, but this area really is interesting in that we've had Integral Health that's across the street. We've had a community care clinic that currently operates in that center that we'll walk by on the other side of Chalmers South. So there are some services that do attract different vulnerable populations nearby, and sometimes there's a methadone clinic that's present. So there's been some spillage, if you will, of those populations into the community. There used to be a park, Mall Park over here. It was a pocket park. It's been redone. But the park was a draw for a lot of drug traffic. That's all changing. It's getting better, and we've worked more cohesively. But there has been sort of a pocket of things here because the public housing property was there. Let's stick other not great stuff near the public housing property. That thinking and that model has changed a bit. So you're right to see a change, but to point out the change. But I think there was some intentionality of sticking stuff here for a long time, and some of that's certainly spilled over into Chalmers. But would you guys maybe comment more broadly?
Yeah, I think the properties around us are dealing with similar issues, and those issues would be. I think that some of the things that we've been dealing with have just been random, not necessarily planned out. Just those that may be walking down the street and decide to do something crazy at the moment. We did have a lot of homeless in the area. We dealt with that in the beginning. That's kind of faded out since some of that population have kind of been moved from the area. And then in the beginning, we moved some residents in. Some of those we fade out. We got rid of a bit of that element as well. It does seem like things are getting way better, but then there's some pockets of trouble. So whenever those are identified, we deal with it. And then we again try to reassure the residents that we are working on any problem areas and to engage them as well.
Do we work with the managers of the properties around us that are not HACA properties?
No, ma'am. We have not worked with them directly.
I do like that idea. I think that would be a good resource to establish those connections and just check in every now and then and see if the same thing's going on here or going on across the street.
Yeah, because if you've got a property over there that's market rate, I mean, why would it be isolated? Why would these issues be isolated just for us and right here as opposed to also across the street?
And we know the Cielo folks and some of the neighbors, so yeah, we can, and Ron, maybe you and I can brainstorm on that with Will a little bit and then figure out maybe tomorrow who the right folks are. That would be great to make that connectivity because it benefits them too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
That's a very good idea. In fact, my wife works for a management company also, and she does market rate properties, and she's actually been dealing with a shooting this week, which is something they've never seen before. So they're in kind of uncharted territory, so I think there could definitely be some lessons learned and some best practices to be shared.
No, I'd like to see us, as you all have time and as it makes sense, to pursue those relationships and some collaboration.
Yes,
yeah, that's a very good idea.
I have a suggestion. Maybe we could invite the manager or managers to our resident council.
Or maybe even have like a manager's lunch, really invite folks over for sandwiches from the surrounding buildings and have that kind of, that would be nice to work a little more cohesively in the community. I think that's a great idea. And also, Marina, maybe you'd be able to help us with that as well, because your safety efforts, will redound to, neighboring properties also. So, great. Thank you, Oliver. And Ben, you're more really on the compliance side.
Correct. I'm the director.
And so I understand TDHCA was here last week. How'd it go?
Really well. We had no findings, which sometimes can be challenging on a lease-up, but we're really happy about that. And we just found out 2 days ago, our investors didn't find any issues on 100% of the files. So really excited about that.
Was TDHCA doing a file review, inspection before COs?
This was on the file. Physical inspections have been requested. They're just really backed up because they didn't do them for about a year and a half. This was on the files. And Ben's very humble, but the words TDHCA used in their email was, "Your files are perfect," and that we wish everyone else did their files like you. So,
congratulations.
Hats off to Ben.
Right.
I mean, TDHCA is allowed to give such high praise now.
Get that comment.
Very much.
But congratulations.
Thank you. Well, thank you all. Why don't we keep moving on through the board meeting, Mr. Chairman, and we'll let you all get back to work. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
So next is Matt Benson.
Matt Beaton, and he hit it off. He gave us the tour, and he hit it off.
And Paul Martinez.
He went off too.
Yeah, they all went.
And then Ross.
Yeah.
Left as well. All right.
I'll say I may have signed the wrong sheet, but that's the speaker sheet. I was trying to sign in for everybody on our team. But...
Yes. Perfect.
Sorry.
Perfect.
Mr. Chairman, I think we did want to ask, if with your indulgence, I'd like to ask Officer Moreno if he would come forward to say just a quick word about his security efforts, although he's a member of the new member of the staff. His role is pretty special as we work to try to address security issues. So Hank, why don't you sit down for a moment, and why don't you reintroduce yourself to the board, and then also if there's anything you'd like to highlight that you're doing in the security space, maybe take 2 or 3 minutes. And
I'll try to keep it short because I got a lot of stuff. And I wanted to talk to DeMarlin to see why so far I'm doing okay. I was going to ask him about that, but I'll get him later. My name is Hank Moreno. I'm the security coordinator for all the 18 properties plus these. And my goal is to keep the property safe, keep the tenants safe, and keep the management safe. And since I've started, those three things have morphed into like 50 things, and it's been a pleasure to assist the residents. Some of the programs, I'm just going to touch on some programs program I want to talk about is it's called Love It Lock It. By the way, I was with APD 21 years. I was with the San Antonio Park Police for 10 years before that. So. Don't try to do the math. I am old. I started when I was 5. So one of the programs I want to touch on is auto theft. Auto theft and burglaries. When I was a district rep with APD, I started a program called Love It, Lock It. And the premise is if you love it, lock it. And APD didn't take that on. They changed. They have the same program, but they call it something else. So, but there's an organization, and I can't think of the organization's name at this time. But they've incorporated that saying, "Love It, Lock It." So they're taking off. It's a nationwide organization, and they're using it. So, and I'll show you. So what I'm going to do in the properties, and just a little quick update on the stats here. We've had, I went back to January. We had four auto thefts, 2 aggravated assaults, and I think the one is the one that happened over here, and the other one is the kid with a pistol. BB gun. The one that looked like a pistol, so they labeled that up. And we've had just some family disturbances and stuff, so I'm going to tell y'all, as a police officer, I was here a long time, and I was a HACA liaison for 7 years before I retired. And the old Chalmers was bad. I mean, it was just a lot of activity. And what we have now in comparison is pretty much nothing. I didn't have to write down the activity that goes on here. That's how I think it's good. But we're going to work on some of the other things, you know, like the auto thefts and the burglaries. And what I'm going to do is, we have a pamphlet that I go to every car that's in the parking lot on our properties, and I look inside to see if there's anything I want to steal. And when I do see it, I mark it off, and I put it on the windshield to alert the owners, hey, don't leave your stuff in plain sight. The crooks, the burglars, they shop just like everybody else does. They look in your car, if there's nothing, they go on. But this is the shirt that gets some made. Obviously, this is for the Austin Police Department. And every time they have a little festival or whatever, they hand these out. And I have 3 shirts, and anybody that wants them can have them. So I'll start that program probably in the next week or two. And there's other pilot programs that I'm thinking about. But I have to get with the bosses to see if they're interested in it. You know, and I always keep the funds in mind, so I try not to come across with expensive things, you know, keep it down. I'm working with the residents. I've been dealing a lot with the residents that are having issues with each other, with other situations. and I've been able to mediate with them and keep things calm. I try to stress to them, you know, for 2 years we didn't have any really police presence on the properties because of COVID, and that's everywhere. And so now that I'm here, I'm back, and now they're going to have to start, you know, no more cussing at the managers or with amongst each other. All that's going to stop. And I'm trying to focus that on, they have a lot to lose if they continue that type of behavior. We're just not going to have it. We're not going to accept that anymore because the managers work so hard, they don't need that on top of what they already have. And just my last thing, you know, the crime around this area, I did not do a crime stat. I just did a crime stats on our properties. The burglaries and stuff, that I didn't go outside because, you know, even though it does affect us, you know, it's not here. Now, the bigger Austin gets, the more people that come here, the crime stats are going to go up. That could be here, that could be anywhere. It's not our fault, that's just the nature of the beast. The more the people, the more the crime, from little things to all the way up to murders and such. So as we're growing every day, you're going to see those stats go up. And, you know, I'm going to do my best to keep those out of our properties.
Can we talk about Arrow just real quick?
Yes, the Arrow, are you familiar with the Arrow program? Okay. We're starting that back up. It
stands for Apartment Residents on Watch.
Apartment Residents on Watch, Arrow. Now, we're going to start that back up, and my goal is to get the residents to watch out for each other. They need to help me keep their property safe. They live here, I don't. And I stress to them, let's look out for each other. When the neighbor, next door neighbor start bickering with each other, we don't want that. We want all the residents to, you know, some people are afraid to go for a walk. That's going to stop. You know, it's going to take me some time, but we're going to get there. But we're going to organize the Arrow program back, get those folks to, I'm going to teach them how to call the police, you know, and some don't. Some don't bother with the police, but we're going to get them to, we need the reports to make a difference. So, and we're going to organize them with the president and all that stuff to keep it going. And we're going to have monthly meetings. And I'm going to give them tips and everything on how to stay safe in their properties and how to keep their children safe and their cars and such. So I've got a lot of stuff, you know, on the burner, so we're going to take care of all that.
Hank, thank you. We're really glad to have you back. I would just say that Hank was a pleasure to work with when he was our APD liaison. Normally, tour duty is like 3 or 4 years. We actually asked APD if they would allow us to hold on to Officer Moreno, because he was doing such a fine job, and we were thrilled. It was sad when he retired, and thrilled that when we needed a security director that he put his credentials forward. So we're welcome you back and into the Haka family. So.
I'll tell you, it took a lot to get me out of retirement, but when I saw this position, you know, most officers would run, because they have that connotation like you spoke of, hey, projects, heck no. I'm telling you, that's going to change. And Mr. Gerber, the staff is doing a fantastic, this place is awesome. When I saw this, I said, man, who said they would want to live here? Me too. Me too. So thank y'all for your time, and it's a pleasure meeting all y'all. And if there's anything I can do, still waiting for my business cards to hand out. But as soon as I get them, I'll make sure everybody gets one. But if you need to get a hold of me, contact the bosses.
I just want to say I really like that idea about letting people know. Because one of the things, the only issue I've ever had in terms of car theft is when my daughter left her laptop in open view in the car. And in the neighborhood I live in, even if I leave my garage door open, if the local police pass by, he'll stop and leave a note. You left your garage door open. And I really like your golf clubs, and that gets my attention.
Yeah.
It got my attention, so I make a conscious effort, and I live in a really nice neighborhood, but I make a conscious effort to let, because he just said, hey, look, I really like your golf clubs, so anybody would have come in and got them. Mm-hmm. And so I think the awareness of, you know, making sure, just the reminder of the things you need to do to keep your property safe and keep your person safe.
Crime has no boundaries. And like I say, they shop, and they'll take what they need to get what they want. But yeah, I think the flyer on the winches, I'm going to do that myself, and I think it'll make a difference.
Thanks, Hank. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a couple of few shirts over. Give them to your kids or somebody.
Commissioners, I don't think, is there anyone else wishing to make public comment before this board?
I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
On Ms. Lupe Garcia, she was awarded acknowledgement through Southwest Keys and LULAC.
Congratulations.
Doing all the
That's a perfect segue. We're thrilled to be joined by Lupe Garcia, who is amazing, and who serves as head of the Citywide Advisory Board to report out. Lupe?
Thank you so much. Hope y'all can hear me. Tuesday, April the 12th, 2022, 10 a.m., Citywide Board Minutes. Meeting called to order at 10:08 by Lupe Garcia. Presentation, Mr. Mike Gerber revealed Lupe Garcia will host a women's conference on July the 1st. PACA board meeting is Thursday, April the 21st at Chalmers Court. Sylvia Blanco announced several property wait lists are open and properties are undergoing HUD inspections. Elizabeth Barnes with Central Texas Food Bank mentioned services and resources available to HACA residents. Summer Prince with Central Texas Food Bank chair the summer youth food schedule and HACA properties locations. DeMonica Foster with Urban League State of Tech Academy classes starting June and May. The HACA community development announcements. Leilani Villegas announced that community rooms are currently open. However, residents and partners need to reserve the space with staff. Leilani gave the updates on housing. Robert Jackson gave youth program updates. Daniel Reese mentioned Rosewood home ownership program. Murphy Rowland provided workforce, IDAD, and IMOMS updates. Catherine Craigle shared information regarding the Austin Public Loaner devices. Under new business, Kendra Estes from Santa Rita is the new Citywide Board Secretary. On May the 10th, the Citywide Board meeting will be hosted at Meadowbrook. Evelyn Holmes discussed Senior Mayfest Health and Wellness Fair. Property updates. Four residents provided the property updates. The meeting was adjourned. Meeting adjourned at 11:30 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're excited about the women's conference coming.
We're excited about the women's conference, July the 1st, at Central Office.
All of you women are invited to come.
Yes, everybody.
I'll be speaking.
And Mr. Gerber will be there present. So, commissioners, y'all are invited. I am so excited. I've been waiting since 2020. So, it's going to be an experience. Thank you so much and on all the support you give me. I do want to say one thing. I want you to know that housing has made me who I am. I have always said, don't ever let anybody define who you are because of where you live. And I want to tell you that everywhere I go, even when I'm with sponsors, like this award that I received, I always say, Housing Authority has made me who I am. They have given the backbone. They have supported me. They've given me a scholarship. And they always acknowledge and everything that's going on. I do what I do is because I love where I'm at. And I respect all residents. I'm not up here and I'm not down here. We all work together. I have a great team. Managers support on what I do. We do everything together. So I want to just let you know that I am very proud of where I live. And I told Mr. Gerber, even if I'm 80, when Santa Rita gets finished, I want to be put back in my same place, in my same apartment. But I want to let you know that everywhere I go, I do give housing the first honor of what I do. And I want to thank you for that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Commissioner, staff would propose that we hold off the overviews of the resident services and we pick up the agenda items that we need to vote on today, and then we'll come back and what time is left. Divide evenly on between AMP and HACA resident services, and then we'll all retire over to Fruit Beverages around 4 o'clock. So hopefully we can move through this one item that we have on the agenda fairly quickly. So, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, we'll go to the consent agenda.
Yes, the first item is the consent agenda, which is the approval of the board minutes, a summary of the board minutes from the board meeting held on March 24, 2022. Does anyone have any changes, corrections, or amendments or addendums to the minutes? If not, the chair will make a motion to approve item number one.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Dr. Hall. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And then we'll turn to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation and Commissioner Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to open the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. It is 2:52 in the afternoon. The first item is the, we've already established, we've had our roll call, we have certified our quorum. The next item is public communication. Has anyone, Nydia, signed up for public communication? Okay. Hearing nothing for public, hearing no one for public communication. Then we will move on to the one item that we have for action for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and that is the discussion and possible action on Resolution 00200 by the Board of Directors of AAHC, authorizing AAHC to execute any and all documents and take any and all action that's necessary to, number one, cause AAHC Subsidiary Limited Liability Corporation, AAHC CDT Center Ridge LLC, to obtain supplemental financing for the Center Ridge Apartments, which consists of multifamily housing units. Mr. Kowal.
Pardon me. Mm-hmm. Do you want to ask for the minute? Do that to that.
Did we skip over that?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. So
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from the March 24th board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie, and the second by Commissioner Apostolo. Any more discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. And thank you. Keeping me on track here. So our next item then is item four. And Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Mr. Gerber, guest, staff. Item resolution 200 is presented to you today to ask your approval to purchase a 308-unit multifamily property on the called the Aspect Apartments. It's located on the 4900 block of East Old Torp. I know we don't have a good detail of that here because of where we're at, but just to give you an idea, if you picture Lexington Hills, which is off of Riverside and Wickersham, this is just a little bit further south, down on the Old Torp side of the south side of Riverside, just south of Riverside. It's a 308 unit property built in 2001. It sits on 15.96 acres. It's got a very nice open area, very, very spacious. I think, you know, we talked about a little bit about the amenities. I think they're very typical of what you've seen prior before, with a nice, a very beautiful swimming pool, outdoor kitchen. We've got a pet park, and with a washing station, a big fitness area, things like that, gate access and carport. This is a property that's being presented to you in partnership with L&M Investments. There are partners on the Urbana at Goodnight Ranch property that we did back in December. They're out of New York, and I think you remember Evan and Amanda who came in and presented to you all at that point. They're tremendous partners, tremendous company to work with. We're really excited about this. We were fortunate that we did get this property off market. It wasn't something that we had to bid on. They had a relationship with the sellers here and asked if we would like to partner with them. A couple of the highlights I wanted to share with you, if you have seen the summary sheet, the floor plans are pretty exciting. 72 one-bedroom, one-baths, 192 two-bedroom, two-baths at almost 1,000 square feet. And the other enticing thing to me was we have 44 three-bedroom, two-bath units that are up to 1,386 square feet. So it's got a nice mix of units there. They are committed to do 10% of these units at 60%, with 40% at 80%. So we're really excited about that. We've got some work to get those units down to that mark. There's a we're not quite at 50%. Yet, but our lease audit's got us somewhere around 40, so we'll be, as we've done on other properties, first in is all units being rented in the future. We'll all hit those 10% and then the 60% till we reach our affordability goals.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
How much dollar-wise are we having to reduce the rents to get it down to the 60%?
So I'm not sure yet because the new AMIs just came out. 2 days ago, and I'm not sure when they go into effect, but I know on the three bedrooms we're probably looking at about $200 and something. So that, you know, we've talked about some of these units that we bought, the newer ones where the drops have been almost $600 and $700 on the larger units. These are not quite as severe, and because of that we're able to do some lower, deeper affordability. But we will have to bring some rents down and do that. And we've got to look at when the new effective rents take into effect, you know, when they actually are effective, when they just got posted yesterday, the new AMIs. Which, by the way, the AMI went from 98,000 is the number, and it went up to 110,000. So where we were paying 60% units at 98,000 was about 58,000. Now it went up to 66,000 for a family of four. So the levels are going up higher and higher and higher. And it's a tough one. It's about a 12.5% increase is what we saw. I did hear Houston, San Antonio actually had a little higher. I think Houston had almost a 15% increase, I think I heard. That. So anyway, we're still evaluating that. The property will be... we're looking at closing this in late... in May. The purchase price, again, is $87 million, and L&M will be putting in approximately $25 million in down payment with about $2.1 million in future capital needs.
Will that affect the closing price at all?
No.
What you're telling me?
No.
That's locked.
It's locked and locked, and we're locked at a great rate, which we're fortunate that they went and locked much earlier. In because of the way the rates have been moving, we're at a 3.92 interest rate, which is a really good rate for an agency debt, and we'll be financing about $65 million.
Had we not locked then, what would that rate be now?
About 4. Yeah.
Close to 5?
Yeah, 4.8, 4.75 now.
Yeah. And what period of time? A couple months?
2 months.
2 months.
Maybe a month and a half. Not even that, yes. 10 years been just really, really moving forward. Sorry. I tell that guy Spam Risk to quit calling me.
I got a remedy for that.
Yeah.
$3.99 at AT&T, they'll block all those robocalls. You'll see them, but you will never hear them.
They need to ask you about that one. But anyway, we're really excited about the partnership with L&M. They're really, really responsive. They've got a very good, they understand the affordability side, and they're trying to do more deals here with us. So I suspect you'll see a few more coming your way in the very near future with them if we're successful in bidding and getting that. This is, again, it's Linder Elementary School, Martin Middle School, Travis High School will be the schools we're servicing there.
Where are they? I know you've told us previously, but where's L&M out of?
Out of New York.
Out of New York. Okay.
And you met them all previously when they came, and they shared, I think their big headline was that when we asked them about how many units they you know, operate, I think they've got a 40,000 unit portfolio.
Yes.
And they're highlighting, so
they're very, 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 doing when we're bidding and talking to sellers about, you know, our reputation and who our clients are.
And how far is it walking distance to Lexington Hills, our other property?
Mile, at the most. We're 0.2 miles from a bus stop, and then another 0.8 to 2 more bus stops. They're less than that, 0.2 miles. 435 feet to the bus stop, and then there's 2 more there. So we've got great transportation in that area. And as you all know, Riverside Drive is just being transformed into a mess over there of new development and displacement of many, many, many people. So we're excited that we can make this one. Should you bust this deal, we're excited that we can make it, affordable and keep it that way in perpetuity.
Well, we think we get a lot of synergies there with other property being nearby.
Montecito's there, Lexington's nearby. There, and then right just just to the south of this one, you back up to Ben White. So we have our three Ben White deals there as well.
And we've got
Urban Oaks is being built. Yep. That Suzanne's working on down with our partners there, just down on Montopolis and Riverside. So we're starting to build a pretty nice presence in that area. I just think, man, affordability is getting out of control, so we're excited about it.
And AMP will manage this property.
So this one will actually be managed by CAS, CAF, because they're part of the deal. But AMP will be they are contracted to do all the compliance and the file audits and the file management on a monthly basis, and they've been very proactive already and will be on the property on a regular basis. So they won't be doing the day-to-day operation, they'll just be doing the compliance and the files.
We'll get you in there managing it eventually.
Well, we can
don't worry.
Is there a period of time that we won't allow their company to manage and then we come in?
We did a 1-year contract with a 30-day cancellation with all parties with our consent. So we can remove them. But they've proven to be very good. They work great.
Their files were in very good shape. That's a very good time.
But were they perfect?
Yeah. Were they perfect? They know they were perfect.
But they will be very soon.
They will be, though.
Is there any other questions I can answer for you?
In a very tough market, we think this makes a lot of sense, because you're going to see fewer and fewer of these deals in all likelihood, unfortunately. So we would strongly encourage a motion to approve purchase of the Aspect.
So I will ask for a motion to take the actions necessary outlined under the item title, and it's resolution 02746.
I so move.
Second. Tara makes the motion. Mary seconds. Any more discussion on the aspect?
Yeah. So what was the resolution?
I think it's 200.
It's 203.
It's
203.
203. 002.
Affordable.
Okay. Thank you.
Approving resolution.
Got back from vacation. You can tell. That's my only excuse. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Any more discussion? If not, all in favor of approval?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank
Madam Chair, I think we can call a motion to adjourn.
We will adjourn the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 3:04.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you all very much.
Mr. Chairman, going back to the main HACA agenda to item number 2, which is resolution number 2746. By the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority to take the following actions with regard to the aspect. 1, acquire the site of the development. 2, lease the development site to the owner of the development. And 3, such other actions as necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution.
I move approval.
Second. There's been a motion made in the second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we will go to the overviews. the report, overview of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Radio Services.
So Joni and Rex, you guys want to come forward? And we will do AAC first, and then we'll go to HACA. So we've got about 55 minutes. So each, if you guys don't mind, we'll let you each have about 20 minutes, you know, to present. I think most of the board has met Rex Jones, who heads up Apartment Management Professionals, or AMP. If you look on this document that we produce each month, the properties at the top are the acquisition and preservation properties. Most of those are managed by AMP, roughly one half of our portfolio. So AMP is the group of professionals that have been assembled to lead and provide management services for those properties. They do some other things at some of our other properties, like you just heard. They'll be doing flower audits and other things at the Aspect, as well as at some other properties as well. Let me invite Suzanne Schwerker also to come forward as well for this part of the presentation. Joni Frieden has been what's your proper title?
You do everything. Director of Operations.
Director of Operations.
Yes. Handles everything. So I just got to say, we're thrilled and feel honored to participate and partner with the Housing Authority. I just quickly want to touch on one or two little things that I've noticed over the years of in this partnership, that we see all the great things that the Housing Authority does for the residents of the properties that we manage. We actually have a couple of staff members now that grew up living in public housing, and when they find out that now their ownership is you guys, and we tell them all the programs that they're just thrilled about it. And then whenever we take over a new asset and we have new employees, and they learn that all their hard work and their efforts go to putting money back into the city of Austin through all these programs, they take a whole new perspective on their jobs of, you know, they're not working for somebody who's now raising rents and making money so they can buy their second and third boat. They're making their efforts go to all the programs that you guys, that this partnership affords us. So it's really nice to see that when these new employees come on board. And I just look at myself as my dad was a football coach for 37 years, and so I'm a kind of a head coach, and you don't win without most valuable players. And this is the most valuable player right here, so I'll let Joni go from that.
Well, thank you so much for letting us come and talk to you and just tell you just a little bit about what we do, and especially when we go in and take over a property, how we determine what kind of services are needed and what things are going to be useful and beneficial to the residents. We presently manage 25 communities for you right now, a little over 6,600 units, and 4,410 of those are reserved for affordable residents. Of those 4,410, 1,680 represent families. So that's kind of what I'm going to focus this on, is just how we would determine like kind of the things that we'll bring in. Although each community that we manage...
Do you have those listed in the handout?
You have your...
4,400?
Mm-hmm. Do we have what?
Yeah, look, probably on your second page. I'm sorry. We all have handouts we gave you, yep. So you can see it, make it a little bit easier.
Third page.
If you want to come. There's a map.
I didn't realize it was that much.
Yes, in here.
That's sort of stunning when you think about it.
Yeah, if you're interested in seeing it on the screen, it's also mm-hmm. being presented up there too. So.
Yep. And then what we've done here is just shown all of our units in each property, the number of families are shown there in the orange. So, you know, we've definitely got some locations in some pockets that are very, very heavily populated with families and kids, and you know, we kind of customize things that way.
Now, I want to ask a question,
absolutely.
And it's a zinger. It was what we were discussing in our last board meeting, and it involved, there she is, the issue of vouchers. Mm-hmm. And the fact that because of this whole affordability issue and trying to find affordable housing for our voucher holders, and then Ron and the last report listed for practically every single property the number of vouchers that held at that property. Mm-hmm. Do we have a list of these 44 10, the number of vouchers that are held at each of your properties?
I think I know where that is.
It's not on the bigger map. It's on your map.
There is a column there that gets updated each month.
I know it's on. So Joni helps Ron report all the vouchers.
Ah, okay.
So on all these properties, like James, he would have to. So the biggest one is Park Express.
58. That's what I was looking at in the report. I didn't realize it was right here too. How stupid of me.
Not at all.
That is so important because right now that's the only avenue we have that's available to us.
Right. And it's been a little bit challenging over the last couple of years because with COVID we have not been able to participate in the orientations. And that, you know, every month all of our properties would go to the orientation and kind of became a contest who could bring the best stuff to get the most people to talk to us and want to live at our property. But, when we do go into the properties, again, each community has a different demographic and we don't know what that is right away. So when we're doing the due diligence, as we were talking about earlier with the aspect, we'll go through and very thoroughly verify all the information in the file. But, we want to know how many people are living in the apartment, male, female, adults, children, and what their ethnicity, age, they work, where do they work, what kind of jobs do they have, how much money. And then we can take that information and kind of customize based on, our different offerings, what we can do. And we've got, just partnerships with some great organizations. I'll grab my water. We partner with different organizations that will help us with after-school programming for kids and tutoring for kids. Community Housing Resource Partners, Young Men's Service League is a volunteer organization that will bring people in to help tutoring and different things. And Things for Adults, Dress for Success is an organization that empowers women to, be able to know how to interview and how to write your resume and how to dress for your interview, and then they give them clothes that are donated so that they can go to work and feel good about the way that they're wearing. So just different, kinds of programming, swimming lessons. There's a sports organization that we just started partnering with, but I've known the owner for a long time. He grew up in project-based housing. He, through a scholarship, football, he played at A&M. And later played, I think, like a season at my favorite team, Buffalo Bills. But he has a program, and everything is about kids, and he travels around. And one of his trainers played professional football or professional basketball in Turkey. And these are guys that the kids listen to, and they like, and they want to be like. And they're athletes, and they care about nutrition, and they care about staying away from drugs, and they're just the kind of role models that we want our kids to be around.
Okay. Now, how do you do this? Do you advertise people or organizations to come in, or how do you set up these partnerships?
How do we find the best way to set a lot of the partnerships? Any we have is just utilize the resources that we have, the people that we have, and the relationships that they already have. A lot of the people that we work with and programming that we're doing are people that I've known in just different parts of life that have interesting stories and have things like gyms where they can come out and, teach kids about physical fitness and teach lifetime sports and things they wouldn't have an opportunity to do. So it's really just, I think the best way is relationships, and when that doesn't work, then I just call Suzanne. Or just start calling people that I know, maybe know people that can, somebody's going to point me in the right direction.
Do you have a certain amount budgeted for these kinds of activities? I mean, is that part of your mission?
Yes.
Say, you're going to be budgeting $100,000 for these supportive activities per year?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And we work with partners to work on pricing that works as well.
And Commissioner, I'd just say, as our investor partners, that's part of our deal. Like, that's in the budget, guys. I mean, this is part of, you want to partner with us?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Because one of my major, major concerns when we first started going into these partnerships, we knew that with what was at that point our base properties, that we were trying to do as much as possible with nonprofits, et cetera, to provide support services. We had no control, really, over what was happening with these other partners. We were hoping that something was happening, but there was no guarantee. So this is really the first time I'm getting a real sense of what that is, the quality of that, and the extent of that activity. So, I mean, I'm flabbergasted and absolutely happy.
Well, let's talk about some of those. So you, some direct examples, like the things we've listed up there. And Suzanne's got some stuff too, so an effort at time. I want you to see some of the things that we're doing there. We're super excited that we're getting a little less.
And these are actually just some pictures we've pulled from some of our different organizations and things. But, you know, one of the biggest things that is so important to all of us, I think, is what are we doing for these kids that miss school for 2 years? They're behind, and so we really want to focus on getting some positive mentoring and after-school programs and homework help and, you know, computer help, and then summer's coming and swimming lessons are essential. If there's water, the kids need to know how to survive. Nutrition and healthcare classes, and we bring in certified health coaches that'll help parents understand. If you think that it's common sense, but it's really not. Common sense is what, you know, what are considered a well-balanced diet, and then how do we do this on a certain income? And we do, they do grocery store tours and trips and things, and just kind of different things. Resume building and interviewing and training, those things through organizations like Dress for Success. You know, a lot of people don't know where to start to get a job, and then you don't have the right clothes to wear to get a job, and nobody will talk to you. So this is an organization that, it's a volunteer basis and donation basis, but they'll set someone up with a wardrobe of things to wear to their new job. And then just exercise classes and that come to the property, so they don't have to go anywhere, and we organize those in our own gyms or common spaces. And one of the most really popular things and successful things over the during COVID, I think, was these farmers markets, and we work with local farmers who they set up a table of just everything that you would see, and it's all free to the residents. They just bring their shopping bag and grab what they want, and they love it. We do it, now it's about once a month, but it's the most popular thing done anywhere. You know, National Night Out is another big thing for us, and that's a chance for the properties to invite the local police force and the fire department. All of our vendors kick in and donate for prizes, and we bring food trucks in, and you know, it's like just a fun block party. And then probably one of our most important things is our partnership with Department Life Teams, and this is where they put a couple on an apartment as residents. They're the CARES team, and they live there, and they are actively involved with the residents, and you know, help. They're like an extension of us, so we're there 24/7. Our backpack and school supply drive is super successful, and that's all donation-based too, and we have been able to provide backpacks for everyone. And I know you probably can't see these from there because I certainly can't, but I did add some of our resident feedback. We also, when we get into a property, we immediately, through a third-party company, do a survey of the residents so we can find out what are their wants, what are their needs, are they happy, are they mad, what are we working with, and how do we fix it. And then after that, they survey from when somebody comes out as a prospect, whether they lease or not, they get a survey after someone moves in to find out how the move went, every time a work order is completed to find out if they're satisfied, was it handled quickly, was it handled to your satisfaction, and then various touch points during the lease. We want to find out if they're happy, their likelihood of renewing, if there's things that we can do better, you know, all that great feedback. And then if they do end up giving their notice after they've moved out, we send them another survey just so we can find out what can we do better. And we incentivize our residents for filling out the surveys. We have, you know, one prize for a year, you know, for whatever the situation is, and then they'll get a drawing that, you know, maybe they could win a $200 gift card. But some of the things that the residents do say and do feel is that they feel that we care about our residents. Everyone is just generally caring and concerned about what can we do to make a difference.
We'll turn it over to Suzanne and let her run through her scroll real quick. But it's amazing because when we first started doing this, and we've done this, I do want to say this is something we're not leaning to do. We've been doing this for years, and it's grown tremendously. But I'll be flat honest with you. I was like, this demographic we serve and these people that we're leasing to, they are not going to waste their time coming out to this stuff. But let's give it a whirl and see what happens. And I'm not kidding you. I cannot believe the amount of participation that we've gotten from almost all of our sites. The National Night, when we did Center Ridge Integrity for the first time, we had hundreds of people. I was like, we're going to get 10 people out there, and it was incredible. So anyway, it's great stuff. I wish we had a little more time to go more into depth, and we can always come back and share more, take you out and talk more about that. But I want to get through Suzanne's stuff too, because she's got a couple pretty cool things she's doing over there.
I have a question. While what you all have included here has been all very positive, mm-hmm. What kind of feedback have you gotten that was not so positive?
Do you mean when we go into a property and take it over, or after we've been there for a while?
Have you been there? I mean, these folks
yeah.
who said,
yeah.
I lived here for 8 years, or I lived there for a year. I mean, what mm-hmm. what generally is
generally? I would say that on our just portfolio-wide, our retention rate, renewal retention rate, is about 65%, 65 to 68%, which is higher than the industry norm. And we want these residents to stay and not leave, because it's so much better. I mean, it's so much better for all of us. So we do everything that we can do to treat the residents well and to treat the residents respectfully in the way that they deserve. And everybody starts with care and compassion. But the first thing is communication. As long as we're communicating and being very open and honest with the residents, and they're doing the same, we're not having a big situation of unhappy people. Do we have one every now and then? Absolutely. But it's
that's been our biggest miss.
Yeah.
I mean, when you take over and you hire staff that's been dealing with market rent stuff all their lives, and then you've got to teach them this new mentality, their communication sometimes just isn't there, and we miss. And then they'll call me, or they'll call, and Mike gets a call, and Suzanne gets a call. And so I think it's really boils down to communication. I think if there was the most negative things I said is if the manager just would have said da-da-da-da-da, but that's
mm-hmm.
training over
mm-hmm.
time and working with them over time.
And that's definitely something that we are working on in our training of our managers, is just communicate.
And Jenny, would you agree also that I work hearing from a lot of folks now because, you know, for a couple of years almost, we weren't able to do meaningful lease enforcement. You'd say, pay your rent, you're behind on your rent. But the ability to actually go and take action on somebody was, you know,
right.
didn't exist. And
right.
so with the eviction moratoriums. So now you've got folks who have, you know, we'll hear from folks who, you know, well, I want to stay, and management's not working with it. Maybe, well, how's management not working with you? And then they explain, so, well, can you tell us why you chose not to pay rent for 6 months and you still were working?
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know, and then you go down a path of, you know, why there's a, you know, the relationship's, you know, not so easy. And so, and, you know, and but even in those cases, you all have been great about working through, because you do want people to stay.
Well, and if they've gotten into a situation, and I know we're talking about a situation last week, like, we don't ever want somebody to lose their housing. If you can't pay your rent, communicate with us, and we tell this to the residents when they move in, because we're going to figure out a way to make this work out for everybody.
But it's also the communication from the staff to that resident
yes.
that gets missed. And the resident says, I came in there three times and I told you, and you know, the next thing you know, they got a 3-day notice on their door, and it escalates.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it's just that, and that's hard for some of our newer staffs that we hire and we take on that have never had to do this before. That's not what they're taught. They're taught a completely opposite mentality.
Market based, it's a very different environment.
But I will say, before I turn over to Suzanne, I know, what was it, maybe 2 years ago? I mean, it still stands out to me that we had that bad fire at Terracina.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Sunday. And I remember it because I got worried about the fire, and my older daughter had just learned how to drive. And she declared that she would drive me up to the top of the fire. So I don't know what was more, you know, I was more terrified about what I was going to be at the fire or the drive up. But we drove up to the side of the fire, and Joni was there, and her staff were there. They had been there for quite a while. And, you know, it was terrible what had happened, to be sure. But and then we got a call from Ron, and I got a call from Councilwoman Alter. And we had this conversation, and the conversation ended basically with, you know what, we don't have to worry about, you guys are going to take care of your residents. I'm not worried about you all. Call if you need help from us, but I don't have to, you know, worry about you guys taking care of the residents. And Hoppe didn't have to worry about it because AMP got it. Joni didn't have an easy few days, but you know, we really appreciated the stepping up. So we've seen a lot of that mm-hmm. over the years. It's not always easy, and there's management issues, but it's, again, you know, they're a contractor, but they're also a team member as well. And so, you know, we try to be respectful, you know, of all of that. But it's important to remember that they're providing a service to Hoppe. So Ron and Suzanne spend an awful lot of their time working with, you know, with Rex and Joni and their teams to make sure that those service level expectations are being met, and we're cognizant of it. And it's not an evergreen thing. It's year by year, and we make sure that the expectations are clear. So we keep the communication strong between us. But it's been a wonderful, you know, I'll just speak for myself and for Ron and Suzanne. I mean, we feel like it's been a very productive relationship for Hoppe. And from my perspective, you know, the more things that you know, as we purchase properties and have the ability to acquire more properties in Austin, you know, our ability to partner with AMP and have confidence that's going to be done right is really, you know, a blessing, because a lot of other housing authorities don't have that confidence in their management partners. And then you see rotating of management companies. And Commissioner Carrington, you and I know about, I mean, properties that rotate management companies because they just can't get the right fit and the right feel, and it doesn't work. And rotating management companies is terrible.
As we talk about rotating management companies, how long do your all count? What's the typical length of time for a manager at your property, at, you know, collectively?
We probably have very little turnover at AMP. So when our managers leave a property, it's because they've been promoted to a bigger opportunity, a bigger property, more units, maybe a different type of property. Maybe one was more seniors, and they're now at a one with a lot of families and things. So that's kind of the move around that we do. But they're there for their stability on property, their stability with the maintenance and the on-site team, and they're there for years. We've got, some of his managers that were at Bentry, which was the first property that AMP managed for y'all, and I only know about it because it was in my portfolio for the company that I used to work for. But that manager and that lead that worked for me at that property for a different company are still with AMP today, and that was 14 years ago. So that's a long time in this industry. When you look at resumes and people have 18 months, it's the longest job ever. So,
and the length of time a manager stays, I think, directly relates to how satisfied the residents mm-hmm. are.
Because
when they walk into the office, are they seeing some of the same people? Or
yes.
If they walk in every 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months, then is there somebody new in the office?
You want to know
so,
that 100%.
That may be one of the factors in lower turnover.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of times the tenants get the management companies mixed up with the owners. So if you change a management company, they're all over, you know, it goes all over the apartment complex. Oh my God, they sold the property. There's a new company, you know. So it's nice to have the longevity of AMP.
Well, thank you, AMP team. Appreciate you all very much. And
thank you for the opportunity.
So on the other side of the sheet, as you notice, we've got AMP is dealing with the blue property, the acquisition preservation. There's a bunch of others on the bottom as well. So Suzanne's going to touch very quickly, less than 3 minutes or less, the services provided at those properties.
I'll go fast. Mine's vanilla. I did not add pictures because I wasn't sure of the screen and stuff. I am one that does not have an AMP. I have 5 million management companies for every other property. Most of ours, and just to remind y'all, all of mine are tax credit. All of them are 60% and below incomes. So it is very challenging to manage. So most of our properties try to get a third-party company to come in and do our social services. Because they are tax credit properties, TDHCA does require certain services be done. We like to go over and above. These companies that we hire have tons and tons of contacts so that we're able to pay them to oversee the social services, but they bring in a lot of them for free. So Community Housing Resource Partners at Bridget Harris Ridge has a tremendous after-school program. Portfolio Resident Services is really good too. They don't have as robust of an after-school program, but they do handle the kids very well with their homework and everything. Then Studios at Think East, we were part of a St. David's grant. They kind of used Think East for some research information, so kind of on the health side, trying to see what the community needed, and Ryan Grinstaff was kind of a holdover, and she's separate from St. David's now, but she does kind of run our social service program. And then we've got three properties that do their own social services, and that would be Bridget Granada. We have a total dedicated staff member on staff, and then Reserve at Springdale and Urban Oaks. We're looking to probably transfer over to a third party, but the staff does run or oversee some of the contractors that we bring in for the social services.
And Suzanne, these services are services that that each year have a compliance review done on them.
The bare minimum, mm-hmm. And we do keep, you know, you have to keep your log, you have to make sure everybody signs in and stuff, but we like to go over and above that as well. And I just put a bunch of examples. These are not... We've got very similar services at most of the properties, but you know, it depends on what the property needs. We've got some senior sites, we've got some properties that are very heavy with kids, some that are more heavy with professionals. The difference between some of my properties in South Austin and North Austin, it's just, you know, you have to really watch the way we find out whether people are happy with the services or not is whether they show up. And then there's kind of three questions we ask. Do you not want this service? If you want something else, you know, let us know. Are you just not happy with the way we're presenting the service? Or I can't remember the third one. are you scared? Are you just scared to come? And that's a lot of the things that we do. We're trying to foster a community. We want people to know their neighbors. We want them... My whole idea when I think of community, the word that pops into my mind is belonging. And we want people to belong. And so there's several areas. We like to do the after-school programs. Some examples of K through 12 programs are like book clubs, character education, you know, drilling down into like dedication and what is a character building, career counseling, discovering your purpose, little STEM projects depending on whether it's kindergarten or 12th grade. And then we also have adult classes because we want people to continue to grow and better themselves. We've got credit counseling, financial planning, workforce readiness, which is like resume building and stuff, GED, ESL study hall, which we have somebody come in and help people with that. Also, like the benefits assistance, the thing that comes to my mind is the rental assistance through the COVID thing. We had, I'm going to tell you, Portfolio Resident Services, they went door to door, helped them fill out every application, made sure that all the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted, and we got so much assistance at our properties because of it. When we had the ice apocalypse, they were at the properties with water. They were delivering, they were door-to-door, making sure everybody was okay.
So they, who are they? Who is Portfolio Rescue?
They're kind of, you know, Ron talks about the CARES team, and they're very similar. They're just a private company that, and they're very well known. They're all over, I think, the United States, but they just offer social service things. They don't actually live on the property like a CARES team, but they go out, and that's what they do, is they just go to
John Couch in Houston. Isn't that Portfolio Resident
yes.
Services?
I is think it is.
Okay.
I think you're
got
right.
it. I've placed them. I know who they are.
Good memory.
They've been really good. I mean, we just started bringing them on with almost all of my LDG properties, and that they've just been tremendous. I think we got pictures of, they just had a sock hop at the Villages of Ben White, and it was packed.
Okay.
So then, we bring in income tax preparation, which I'm sure we all were working on that kind of stuff lately, in notary services and legal referrals. We also want to make sure that we have a healthy community. So I know I would love to have a property like Asher, because that would be perfect for the walking club. I mean, we definitely are able to do that. Weekly fitness classes, and several of our projects have a company come out and do 2 fitness classes a week. And I know out at Springdale, that there is a group of ladies, they have little kids, the kids go and play in the corner, and they are there every class, and it's really great. We've got some goal setting. The health fair is more, I think, geared towards our senior property. With COVID again, I know I struggled with mental stuff, you know, during COVID. It's just the isolation. So we have self-care Saturday at some of our properties just to make sure people are checking in and giving them some tips and stuff. Also, another thing with COVID, the assistance with just meeting your basic needs. And my group of people, you know, 60% below, this is definitely a need. We try to have a food pantry at all properties. Our companies that oversee the social services were able to get some gift cards donated from HEB, and they gave those out. We try to do clothing exchanges. I know, you know, especially with a bunch of people with small kids, it's really nice to be able to do that. I know when I grew up, I wore my cousin's clothes all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you don't have family in town, it's nice to have that community to be able to do that. And then, you know, another part is just in neighborhood development. We want to make sure that not only in your apartment community, but all of your neighborhood, you know what's available for the, you know, just sharing the resources. We have been bringing in law enforcement to kind of give some tips and help everybody know that they are friendly and they are on your side, and to give them tips, especially with, you know, the crime rates going up.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it fun, then we also have our social events. You know, we gear them towards the teens and little kids, make sure that they have games and snacks for after school. But along with that, we try to slip in a little lesson, you know, caring about yourself and caring about your friends and stuff. And then the adults too, you know, just kind of enrichment programs, you know, how to meet your neighbors and stuff like that. And then around the holidays, you know, people do struggle with grief and loss, and so we did that as well. And then, you know, health and nutrition are always very important. And I've gotten so many questions about, well, how do you cook healthy on a budget?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of things, diet and exercise. weight and diabetes for teens. You know, we're seeing a lot more of that. You know, we are what we eat, and then heart-healthy food. And then I'll end with, I asked them, I was like, you know, y'all did such a phenomenal job through COVID, but what was the difference? And so they let me know, you know, we had to go to virtual classes, remote learning on a lot of things. They helped teach our residents technology because, you know, everybody's got to know how to do Zoom and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. There were fewer in-person events. If they had giveaways, they would do a grab and go, so they would have one person come in, grab their bag and go. Mm-hmm. And that goes with one in and one out. We gave away masks all the time. And then the final thing, now that COVID is going away, training on how to reconnect with your community. You know, I was talking to somebody and they were like, you know, our first company thing, I had to remember how to do small talk. You know, everybody. So it's been very popular, especially that. And now that we're at a point where we can do events in person, we're starting to really spread those out again, and it's, you know, getting warmer, so we're able to do them outside as well. And so that's my 30-second, my 5-minute overview.
But I hope you get a sense that there's a lot of rich programming at the properties, although the residents at the AAC portfolio, you know, are more independent and more, greater abilities to live independently than at our historic RAD properties. Mm-hmm. And not that a lot of residents in those properties aren't able to live independently as well. You know, lots are. But there tends to be more folks with greater levels of needs and services, you know, living within that core 18 property, you know, HACA portfolio. So, but you know, even here, same thing that Suzanne just said, we're all just trying to meet people where they are with the services that they need, and it varies property by property. So I thank you all for what you're doing, and it would be helpful, I think, now to maybe turn to what we're doing at those 18 properties and give you all just a quick taste of that, because it's a richer array of deeper programs. You have communities and schools and boys and girls clubs and job training and healthcare programs. So thank you all so much.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a brief segue to the presentation because now we're going to talk about the resident services across our, 19 now, I say. If people say 18, it's 19 now, right? We have properties, 19 because of Chalmers West. And so my name is Leilani Villegas. I serve as the Senior Director of Community Development. And next slide, please. So we wanted to do a brief overview of Chalmers Court, but y'all heard during the tour the wonderful, built in 1939, and Barbara mentioned that resident services included Chalmers Nursery School, AK Mainspring Schools, and homemaking classes. That's how far resident services came in. I wanted to share two very powerful quotes that have been published all over the city. One is from Geraldo Castillo, who is a former resident of Chalmers, and an Austin Pathways donor. He was an executive for Capital Metro. And he said, quote, "Chalmers was my neighborhood, my community, and my home." And also a quote from Councilmember Pio Renteria, who has been a champion for Chalmers as we move forward with building this property. He said, quote, "If you live here in Chalmers Court, you are poor and other people look down on you." So just look around and see how far we've gotten to what people used to think maybe 5 years ago. So upon completion of the three phases, we'll provide about 400 mixed income income rental units, improvements, and Mary says, I think she has it on the top of her head, central AC, new plumbing, electrical system, energy efficient appliances, fitness center, computer lab, community rooms, and Google fiber internet. So this is the team that I have behind me here, the experts, and we're going to talk about the resident pillars that we focus on. Next slide. And we're going to share our Austin Pathways mission. So of course the Housing Authority has their own mission and vision, but as a 501c3 subsidiary of the Housing Authority, Austin Pathways, we also have our own residence-focused center and mission and vision. So the mission of Austin Pathways is we provide pathways to a better quality of life, to break the cycle of poverty through a culture of trust, person-centered programs, and place-based programming. So what does that mean? And if we look further down to the vision, it will pretty much describe what we mean. We envision communities where all residents are provided the opportunity to achieve their goals through educational programs, leadership roles, and neighborhood engagement in a safe and healthy environment. We see here economic success being valued in the community and power and autonomy about mobility. One thing that we want to make sure is that everything that we do with Austin Pathways is resident-centered, resident-voiced, resident-led. And so all the different resident pillars that we have a champion who's a resident that will carry us through that resident program. So next slide, please. So when I first started about 4 years ago, I barely saw Chalmers South being built. And so I'm not an architect, so I didn't know what the blueprints looked like. So Anne had a lot of coaching from Anne, a lot of coaching from Angie. What does this look like? One thing that I knew was that at some point, Chalmers East was going to be medical. There was going to be a medical and dental services clinic. So as we were looking at the blueprints, the way we were going to map this out was Austin Pathways has four resident pillars. And particularly here at Chalmers, so the first being health and wellness. So we have Chalmers East, which will focus on the medical and dental services. Right now, the Boys and Girls Group and Youth Educational Success right now is right there, which is south, which will be west, because we'll be building the building right across, will be Chalmers. So that will be focused on youth educational success. And so south will be workforce development, and we have our workforce development manager here, Roland. And then digital inclusion with Google Fiber, which is Catherine, will be all across three phases. Next slide, please. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Catherine to talk about one of our success stories about a family threading all four pillars. So let's meet the Lara family.
The Lara family, yeah. And if you actually look outside, if you can see those construction workers, that it just happened to, by fate, just be working right there. That is pretty much, Daniel, right, the exact location where this picture was taken of Mr. and Mrs. Lara at our last national night out at Chalmers. And you can see they're wearing Chalmers Quartz yesterday and tomorrow. So that is just so powerful. And the Lara family, wonderful family, you think about, so there's 158 families there at the time that were being served. What could they look forward to in our four pillars? Well, they could look forward to, with their five children, they could look forward to a new medical and dental clinic. And they did receive health and wellness assistance from Daniel. Five kids in the family. Mm-hmm. They could look forward to summer internships, yes, incentives, scholarships, and other kinds of parent-child literacy. Those two parents with those five kids, when this picture was being taken, two of their oldest were graduating from high school. So you can see the pride on their faces. Also, welding class, all kinds of workforce enablement, including Mr. Lara was a digital ambassador, surveying his community to get input back to the city about what's needed in this neighborhood. And finally, of course, they could be fully digitally connected as a family and participate in all ways. Now this family, if we ask Daniel, where is this family now? This family actually left Chalmers on a voucher, and Daniel has identified this family as a potential for home ownership. Mm-hmm. And so this gives you a picture of a family, that there are so many other families like this at Chalmers that are benefiting from those four pillars and ultimately that path to home ownership. Next slide.
Hi everybody, my name is Murami Lee. I'm the program manager for Health and Wellness with the Bringing Health Home team. I just started on my position. This is my third week, so.
But you've been with HACA for?
But I have been with HACA for 5 years, and I came from the family self-sufficiency side of assisted housing with Lisa. But now I am here with
Oh, don't look so enthusiastic. That was so happy. Lisa complained for 2 months about it, so way then. Sorry about it. Go ahead.
So I'm here today just to share some great health work, related work that's happening here at Chalmers specifically. So as you saw during the tour, you saw one of the most exciting things that's happening this year, which is the on-site medical and dental facility that's coming sometime this year soon. So that is in partnership with the Community Care. Chalmers will feature a 5,000 square foot facility with 5 exam rooms on the north wing and 6 dental care rooms on the south wing, and a shared front desk and waiting area in the center connecting the two sides. In addition, 10-15% of the appointments will be reserved for our Chalmers residents, which is fantastic. In the past, many of our residents were unable to attend appointments at even close clinics, including community care, because there was just a lack of available appointments. So we're hoping that with the opening of this facility, access to our residents will be increased and more will establish their primary care home there, which would ultimately increase the positive impact on their overall health. So we had the groundbreaking on the 4th earlier this month, and that's the picture from the ceremony. That's very exciting. And the completion of the current construction is to be projected to be completed in the summer this year, and hoping to open in the fall of 2022. So in preparation, we're going through this process of redetermining insurance coverage, whether that be Medicare, Medicaid, MAP, or MAP Basic, and also we're conducting outreach regarding insurance and getting residents enrolled if they're not currently covered. So that once the clinic is open, they have the means to utilize the facilities right away. And another important work we'll need to do.
Next slide.
Oh, thank you. Another important work we'll need to do is to increase awareness about the clinic itself, but also get the residents excited and engaged about their own health and prioritizing access to care. So we're in the process of developing those methods right now. And that brings us to the next project, which is called the UHC Community Catalyst Initiative. This is funded through United Healthcare, and it's a collaborative of 4 different partners right now: PACA, Community Care, and People's Community Clinic. There's actually going to be a 4th partner that's a community-based organization, but that selection is still under evaluation. This also is one of our main projects this year, and it's really incredible because we get the opportunity to partner with formally partner with two-thirds of the SQHCs in Austin. And so the objectives are to address health equity, promote positive health outcomes, and expand access to care. In the month of February, we did host some listening sessions at 5 different properties, which also included here at Chalmers. And and that was in focusing on in determining what the residents' priorities were for health. And that qualitative data that we received from that work has been the starting point for this initiative. Currently, we have a lodging model in progress, and so far we have determined the short-term, mid-term, and long-term outcomes. And in going forward, we'll need to dig into the assumptions and the external factors, as well as the inputs, activities, and outputs, which at that point we'll be able to identify and bring in our 4th and final partner, the community-based organization. So we hope to launch the program sometime this summer, and some of the long-term outcomes that we've identified are that patients are able to state where their primary care home is and how to help others find theirs, which for our Chalmers residents, we're hoping that that will be the on-site clinic, to increase the scheduling and attending healthcare appointments, to be more engaged in advocating for themselves during appointments. Patients are better able to understand the information that's shared during the visit and to decrease barriers that prevent an ability to prioritize health. So, of course, all of those are great, but we also really want the participants in the program to become role models and resources for the community, and which will increase the community cohesion altogether.
Next slide.
Thank you. Right before that, since many of these long-term goals that I just shared with you align with the awareness and engagement outreach efforts that we need to do before the clinic opens, this initiative will be really, you know, it's a great way for us to get prepared and get the community excited for the opening. So now, finally, I'd like to share a success story of Ms. Myra Rubalcaba. I think some of you guys have met her during this tour.
Oh, right here.
Oh, there she is. So, come on up. So she is one of the community health workers on the Brain Health Home team. She has been fantastic to work with so far. And she's actually been with this team since the inception of the program back in 2018. So she is a veteran. And I just wanted to share that her journey began right here at Chalmers West, in fact. And she, due to the construction, she received a voucher and is no longer living here currently, but she's still very engaged with the residents, and she is the assigned community health worker at Chalmers. So she is, you know, it's fantastic to have her here. And since she began, she actually, back in 2018, she was a contractor all up until very recently, but we were very, very excited and happy to announce that she is now a full-time employee of Taka. Some of the health-related work that Myra leads here at Chalmers is performing wellness assessments, delivering meals to our residents, vaccine outreach, insurance coverage assistance, and soon she'll be leading some chronic disease self-management classes. So a lot of exciting things to come. We're very lucky to have someone with so much compassion and connection to our residents here to take on this community health worker position, and we continue and she'll continue her valuable work in leading the community towards better health and wellness. So that's all I have for today, and I'll
Thank you.
I'm Barbara Jackson, and I'm the Family Opportunity Project Director. I forgot. But I'm talking about youth educational success. I did want to back up for a little bit and just mention with Myra that one of the other things I work on is workforce development, and Myra was actually started as a community health worker through the Jobs Plus program. So it's really connected, all the things that we're doing here, and it's really great to see the evolution. When the program started, we really didn't have the funding, but we had some funding in Jobs Plus, so we were able to get that started, and then the health initiative raised the money to keep her going, and finally, we got her on staff. So, great. I just wanted to talk really quickly. With our youth educational success here at Chalmers, we didn't know we were going to be here this late, but the Boys and Girls Club, the kids are over there. You might have seen some get off the bus, walk across, a few jaywalked, which I'll be happy when we don't have to worry about that as much, so they'll be safe. But here at Chalmers, we've got a great club going, and it'll be even better when we have a little more space. We have about 25 to 30 students regularly attending here. Some exciting things going on. One of the students there, an eighth grader, Alberto Lopez Garcia, he won first place with the Boys and Girls Club Youth of the Year. And through that, he earned a $10,000 scholarship for when he goes to college. And that's just one of those national programs at the Boys and Girls Club, but that's, you know, that enriches what they do so much. Another exciting thing is UT has a group called the Jefferson Scholars, and they're an educational cohort, students that are studying education. They come here Tuesdays and Fridays and do a reading program with the students that are behind. And it started up after the pandemic to really address those kids that were behind in their reading. So that's very exciting. We also have and these are partnerships that specifically address those PDHCA points we need for this property. And so we also have Health Start that does snack science, and they have nutritional focus, science of the body, as well as they're really focusing on hygiene, and they do a healthy snack all the time. So they have about 20 kids participating regularly in that. Of course, we have scholarships at all our properties. We have scholarships here. I think the last group, we had three Chalmers residents that received scholarships. I'm really excited to see in one of the applications for this year, a student that was 14 or so when we started the Jobs Plus program. Her mom was one of our community liaisons, and now she's applying for a scholarship. So that's really exciting. Summer youth employment, we have that process going on. We have about 25 kids, and a few of them are from Chalmers, that went through the training and are, you know, going through the getting all their applications sent in so they can have a summer internship either through Travis County or through the program that we do with some funding from SOTFA Mattress. Our Yes Incentive program operates here. Our Youth Incentive Trip, which we hope we can do an in-person trip this year for the kids that are on the ABO and don't have perfect attendance all year. Communities and Schools is an on-site, but of course they're just down the street at Santa Rita, and they're serving the kids at Chalmers. They have about 20 on the caseload. The bulk of them are at Zavala, but there's also some at Oak Springs, Martin Middle School, Eastside Memorial High School, and like I said, they're over at Santa Rita for after school, and some kids go over there as well. And then of course we're working on the parent-child literacy program. That's brand new. We're talking about different partners that could be part of that program.
Can I mention, while Barbara mentions the Smart Kids program, we did find out yesterday, and I talked to Suki. So Suki Steinhauser has been the CEO there for 27 years. Mm-hmm. She announced yesterday that she's retiring.
Oh,
and I had a chance to visit. She's going to stay on. They're doing some great stuff. She's going to stay on helping them with some of their strategic priorities, finding a new CEO, and helping that person to get, you know, really integrated well. But she said to me yesterday when I talked to her that one of the programs she is so proud of and has really been kind of a model for them as they talk to other CIS chapters nationwide has been the Smart Kids program that they've built with HACA. So again, hats off to Barbara. It's been a huge part of that for many years, and to others on our team. You know, but it's we're excited. We're excited to work with Suki, and she'll come. She said she'd come to the board meeting before she heads off. She's not off to the sunset quite yet.
So that's the youth portion. Somebody else is next.
Next slide, please.
I think that's you, Roland.
Oh, okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Murphy Roland. I'm the Workforce Development Manager for the Housing Authority. The first thing I'd like to talk about today is our Workforce Development Partnership for TDHCA Points with Goodwill Services and Financial Literacy. As you guys know, or some of you may not know, Goodwill and the financial literacy piece of this has been partners with us for probably as long as I've been here, and I've only been here 5 years, and I think they've been here a little bit longer. And that partnership has been great because it not only helped our residents, it helped us form partnerships with not just them, but other agencies that do great work just like they do, like Austin Area Urban League. And so we love to continue that partnership, and we just put out a RFP, and we're hoping, well, Goodwill told us today that they'll also be applying for a new workforce development contract with us, and we've also sent that out to other agencies around Central Austin, and hopefully they can apply for this RFP. I'd also like to talk about our two-gen training programs for parents and children. The greatest program that we have right now is this two-generational program, and we opted to adopt this program for the Housing Authority and Workforce Development because it seems to mitigate long-term families and, it seems to mitigate long-term families from going back into poverty. And this program is very unique because it has children training on, we have children training and parents training in the welding program at Booker T. Washington, and we have 11 residents in that program now. Myra is also in that program, in the welding program. That program consists of 70% female and the rest are male. The children are also learning STEM training right at Booker T. Washington also, and so we want to culminate that to sort of mitigate poverty in the Housing Authority. The next program I'd like to talk about is the AmeriCorps program. The AmeriCorps program is a great program because what it does is it brings a AmeriCorps worker into the Housing Authority from the Literacy Coalition, and this person reaches out to our residents and actually helps them and guides them through workforce development programs and also training programs, but it also incentivizes our residents by offering them $100 for working, moving up in a job, getting a raise in a job, and also for training, $40 for taking training courses. And so far we have 130 people in this program right now at the Housing Authority, and this program has been running with us for about 8 months now, and this is a year-long program. And so for 8 months, we've enrolled 130 residents in here, and I think we've given out about $4,000 in total earnings based on their working environment and their training environment.
And that money comes from AmeriCorps Literacy Coalition.
Right.
Not from us.
From AmeriCorps. Okay. I also like to talk about the Fatherhead and iDads and iMoms program. And these are great programs because dads have been sort of not neglected, but it's very hard to get dads to come out and ask for resources or ask for assistance. This program has been up for about 5 years now. Through this program, we've had about 300 men come through the program through all the 5 years. And we felt that this program was very instrumental in not just helping the dads, but helping the moms and ultimately helping the families. And that's why we moved on and we hired our IDAS ambassadors. We have 3 IDAS ambassadors, and we also have a female IDAS ambassador who works with our parent advisory team, and she is our ambassador also. This program was working so well, we decided to sort of get with residents and ask them to make up an iMoms program. I know this sort of seems very interesting because an iMoms program and an IDAS program, but they actually work cohesively together to create a beautiful holistic family program that's based all out through housing. And we're really trying to merge these two into a great group to reach out to families, to reach out to fathers, to reach out to moms, to reach out to children, and just make this a very holistic environment for all families in the Housing Authority. We also have HACAConnect.org. It has 180 professional development courses. And this program was just set up as a system to sort of combat and help people train when COVID-19 hit. And this helps people do a lot of courses. We have 100 people on the platform right now, and we've had 330 courses completed by residents throughout the Housing Authority.
Roland, give me an idea or two of the professional development courses that you're offering through your list.
Oh, yes, ma'am. So they're all soft skill courses, right? So they're based on, I'd say one would be... conflict resolution, anger management, how to move up in your workplace, customer service skills, Microsoft Word 2007, 2010, 2012, 2010, and all those programs, PowerPoint. And we actually partnered with another company corporate training materials that I've worked with in developing some of these courses. So after the 180 courses, we also have them in a bridging format, meaning the courses can be trained in person with full lesson plans on hand. This is something we'd like to institute at Chalmers now that more in-person meetings are here. So now we can schedule things with residents who like to hold training in person.
And you said we had about 100?
180.
Residents that
We have 180 residents on the platform right now, ma'am. Correct.
And how many professional development courses?
We have completed over 300 completed, and we have 180 actually on the platform that residents can complete.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next slide, please.
You all maybe remember a while back when we started, with digital inclusion, what did that mean? Well, that just meant an internet connection and a device. And there was some talk of that you might need to know how to use that device, right? You can't just throw internet over the wall and expect people to know how to use it. So really what we're focused on is digital equity. And what does that mean? That means people can use digital tools to get that power, that autonomy that Leilani was describing earlier. That they are valued in the community, that when our partners like Austin Transportation Department, Austin Public Health, and others reach out, that they can do things like participate in those focus groups from Austin Public Health remotely, that they have mobility options, that they are included socially, that they can participate in church services or other kinds of areas of interest. It also means economic success. So while somebody might ask the question, Are HACA residents digitally included? I don't know. Do they have an internet connection? Yeah. Is that enough? An internet connection? Well, it depends. Is it fast or slow? Can I visit my doctor over that internet connection, or do I have to take the bus? Can I participate in remote learning? Can I go to ACC and get a degree using that internet connection? Or do I have to arrange for childcare and transportation options, so that my children are safe while I'm at school? So we are really focused on full participation and the ability of residents to learn at the same rate that anyone in any other zip code is learning at. So whoever has, so residents of Austin that have very high-speed internet, we want our residents to have the same high-speed internet because they're going to get access to the same tools and they will be learning at the same rate and contributing to Austin in workforce, education, social services at the same rate as other Austin residents.
Okay.
Next slide, please. And so we see this as a three-step process that enables residents to flourish in the digital ecosystem. One is just that connection. Here at Chalmers, we have free in-unit broadband. This was established before I came to Hakka. Google Fiber, that connection that's provided is the fastest connection available in Austin. It's a $70 per month connection and represents, you know, over the number of years that Google Fiber has been at Chalmers so far. By the end of 2023, that'll add up to about $1 million in services. Devices. Thanks to ACC and Indeed, we have partnerships. They donate devices. We have about 15 part-time interns from ACC every year. Those are paid for by ACC. They are refurbishing those devices and getting them out to residents and telling those residents about, hey, Capital Ideas. Now, it's also true sometimes our interns are Hakka residents that came to us through Capital Ideas, which is a really nice full circle. The next thing we do is make sure that, you know, before our goal was to solve the homework gap, when COVID hit, we needed to make sure that Hakka families had a connected home classroom. And just very briefly, you can see here at Chalmers, we asked residents, how often do you have internet at home? Well, they all said, yes, I've got Google Fiber. Then we asked them, do you feel confident that you can use that internet to help your kids get through school this year? And look at the red, yellow, and yellow. A handful said, yes. So it's making sure that families, that parents, and the community have the skills they need to navigate remote learning, at-home learning. Overcoming those barriers. When I first came to Hakka, I asked, you know, several folks, what are the greatest barriers to family self-sufficiency? We said we want residents to be able to leave housing if they can, to be able to move out into market rate housing, subsidized or market rate housing. The two things that came up over and over again, childcare and transportation. Those are the two greatest barriers. So how can we overcome that? Here at Chalmers, we have a partnership with Austin Energy. So Austin Energy has committed $15,000 to hire digital ambassadors to help residents navigate digitally powered transportation using smartphones and apps and vouchers from Metrobike and B-Cycle and others to navigate that transportation. And as well, you know, helping residents learn how to be able to do everything that they can at home so that child care isn't as much of an issue as it can be sometimes. And that enables residents to flourish. So you may be, you know, as you know, we're at Chalmers. We're at a RAD property. And so next slide. And so where does our funding come from? Well, our business model has changed a lot in the last 3 years. I mean, forget COVID and everything else. You know, if you look at 2018-19, about 80% of our resident services revenue was coming from one customer. So it's like, who do I have to serve? I have to make sure I can please the HUD. How do I report? Well, HUD is going to tell me how to report. I'm going to have two reports. And as long as I know how to do those, I'm fine. How many projects? Well, Jobs Plus and other projects, which we excelled at nationally, those projects were in many other cities. So we could learn while those other cities were learning. Now what's happened? Well, now we have at least 7 funders that represent 80% of our revenue. So now we have 7 people with different interests, and we have our own, right? Because we're only wanting to get funding from folks where our interests align with theirs. We also now have data sharing agreements with AISD, with Dell Medical School, and others. And this is great because it's positioning us as being able to provide insight into what helps people break the cycle of poverty. At the same time, we're having to up our game, our data game, in order to be able to do that. In fact, about $500,000 of our revenue this year is tied to evaluation, being able to do that. In addition, we have over $1 million of gifts in kind. What are gifts in kind? They are goods or services that are provided to us at no cost, that that donor writes off. So it's not just here's some masks or here's this, it's I'm going to donate this to you and that's going to be written off. So really we have three types of funding. We have cash grants, we have U.S. Health and Human Services as a donor, we have state health and human services, there are philanthropies, both private and public, that are donors. We had $75,000 last year from St. David's Foundation. We've been asked to submit a $150,000 proposal to St. David's. And we have corporate giving too. And then finally we have gifts in kind, and of course every year, as y'all know, because we always hit you up every year, and it's not too late to give, we have our crowdfunding. And so that crowdfunding or just donations from the public that coincide with Amplify Austin every year. That Amplify Austin funding has basically supported, you know, provided about 200 scholarships to Hawkeye. So that's just a little bit to share how has our business model changed, where does our funding come from and how are we changing that, and what kinds of things are we having to do to collaborate together to make sure that that family, as they're getting their way out of poverty, their rental revenues are increasing, we're decreasing the cost of serving that family on their way to that family self-sufficiency. And so I think that on that way, the culmination is where does that family go, and it's hopefully to homeownership.
Next slide.
So I got a question.
Yes.
When we first started the digital, go back to the previous slide. So when we started digital inclusion, we talked about one, getting the internet, getting Wi-Fi, two, getting devices, and then three, contracting with UT to do a longitudinal study. Where are we with UT and the longitudinal study?
So we have a really pivotal role in helping the city understand what the city needs to do to close the digital divide. And we do provide the internet, devices, and digital literacy, and underscoring all that in evaluation. So every 4 years, the city contracts with UT or other organizations to complete a digital capacity study. UT has produced studies focused on HACA data every 4 years. This year, so it's happened twice already, and this year it's a different Purdue that's doing the work. Study, the city secured 2,000 surveys from across the city. Our digital ambassadors, resident ambassadors working with UT, collected 680 of those. We also collected over 100 Spanish language surveys, while the study as a whole only collected about 150. So our data is in the city's data. What we've learned is that the residents that have adopted internet, have adopted using devices, one, far less social isolation. When asked, do you trust government, do you trust the schools, who do you trust? Much greater trust in institutions. And this is good, right, because we want residents to feel comfortable stepping out, taking that risk to get enrolled, to get engaged in programming so that they can get better overall. We're in the midst right now of comparing Google Fiber and non-Google Fiber properties, K-12 schooling during the pandemic. So what we already know, 2 weeks after the pandemic started and AISD had distributed hotspots, we're getting calls. My kid's going to get disenrolled. They've missed 10 days of school. My hotspot doesn't work. All the powers that be say that hotspots work everywhere in Austin. We did address level testing and we found no. On about half the properties, those hotspots get dial-up speeds. That kid cannot pull up in the school door with that hotspot. So we think we're going to see a big difference in Google Fiber's funding that study. And Google Fiber's funding that study to see the difference. We do have, you know, thanks to that very early partnership that HACA and the city and Austin Freenet, you know, created, we do really have a national kind of reputation for excellence in this area, and that means that we get to learn a lot from other organizations. We get information really timely and we're able to learn as fast as we can.
So I know Tyra's going to ask this, so I'm going to ask it. And that is, I'm glad to know that there have been studies, but I know we would like to see what that data says.
Absolutely, yes.
And so there's a way to provide that, because that's sure. the one thing we need the most is, you know, what did the study show?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I think intuitively we always thought that having the technology would improve the quality of life, but mm-hmm. you need the empirical data, and you need to be able to tell the stories from that.
Right. So,
So Tara, I just opened the door for you. Go ahead.
No, you're doing fine.
Those are available, and I'm happy to share.
So if you all can put together a report for that would be helpful to see, because that's the one thing I've been wanting to know in terms of the third leg of the stool is, what does the data show, and then how do we use that data to maximize it for others who are left out of the digital divide? I mean, who are left out and who need that. So not just here in Austin, but if we are able to prove it here, then in other cities it helps them, because the big thing right now, what everybody's talking about, is broadband. And broadband, and as you said, with some of our properties, the dial-up speed is so slow. I know in Dallas, and talking to state, a lot of state reps, their big issue is in the central city. I mean, it's just the lack of broadband access. So their kids who live there in the city, they just don't have the access to it. And it's so poor, and I know with Dallas, the Housing Authority, they have been, they've been trying to figure out a way to do something with their developments, because they don't. And so, again, broadband is such the deployment of broadband is such a big deal, because the Fed sent a bunch of money down. The state has now a broadband office, and people are talking about it. So to the extent that we can, show what it does, it's helpful to the rest of the state.
Well, I think two parts of that. First, we like to show what we've accomplished, but at the same time, during COVID, I personally felt that we weren't accomplishing much of anything, because we were sent, once the children had to go home, they weren't equipped to know how to do the lessons on computers. Their parents most certainly weren't equipped. And I felt they were just totally losing out months and months of education as a result of that. And I don't know how we can ever determine through any type of study or data collection how much they have missed.
Well, right when COVID started, and it's true, we know that across the board that students lost a lot of time, regardless of how connected they were. So that's a fact. A couple of weeks after COVID started, in fact, the week after, the Hawker Resident Client Support Center was established. And a few weeks after that, we began the HACA at Home Learning Initiative. Mm-hmm. That initiative included convening AISD and several charter schools with Boys and Girls Club and CIS. And it included us surveying about 380 of 620 K-12 households. Mm-hmm. We surveyed those households touched four times in that kind of year and a half. And so we have the survey data, and that's some of the data that's being looked at by UT. But the first time we just asked, how often do you have connection to the internet? How often do you have a device? Other surveys will ask, do you have it or not? Well, that's like water. I don't know. Did it come on? We want to know how often you have it. And what we found is a lot of people said usually or sometimes. And so what we did then is we took those state step by step, household by household, and went back and triaged. How can I get either a low cost, there was an emergency broadband plan set up by the federal government. Can I get this person registered for that? What schools do they go to? Who can I get in touch with or have that resident get in touch with to get them that device? And then Barbara established a program, which is a paraeducator program, that helped residents' parents navigate, because they might have three kids in their house on three different learning management systems. So, so we do have a team looking at that data, and I could just say that, anecdotally, our list with every survey got smaller and smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. And there were families that AISD knocked, CIS knocked, and then when we had permission, we went out. There were families that we still have on that list that we don't know if they ever got their device. Now, we know half of them were AB Honor Roll, so we were thinking, oh, maybe the parent had it and just never called back. Maybe it's good, right? We're in the process of checking that now. But I can just say that, you know, we were very aggressive, and thanks to the board's support in getting out very fast and going household by household, step by step. And our team really worked, our community development team, you know, we worked nights and weekends to try to catch people at the right time to get that done. So we're happy to include some of that data as well.
I would just add, I mean, I think our team was really incredible, and, you know, I think unsung heroes in so many ways. You know, you're right, the Dr. Gunghall. I think we'll never know just how many people got missed, and we know it was a lot, but fewer kids were missed because of the interventions. But it's but we'll never know. And I think ASD, and we've heard Dr. Ellis Alday talk about, you know, a lot of work that they're doing now to figure out how do you deal with the, you know, the combination of summer slides and pandemic slides and, you know, other challenges of the system that AISD has dealt with. And of course, 52% of their dollars get sent off to state, so they can't even invest in teachers and are losing at, you know, such a rapid rate. So it's painful. And our kids represent, you know, you saw several schools there where our kids are the majority of those schools.
Right.
And it's very painful across the board.
Yeah. I think, you know, in terms of our kids, I think we did a great job in terms of trying to get them plugged in and get the information. I think it's probably better than what others...
Well, I'm sure we did, but the point is, we don't know how much they have lost, and we will never find out because the schools don't want to know.
Right.
I mean, that's why we're cutting out all the tests, because they don't want to know the results of the test. The news is going to be so bad. My question is, we can merely assume that the knowledge base is so low. What are we going to do to try to bring them up to a level where they can try, at least when they complete high school, they would stand a chance to succeed in college?
Yes.
And that is my serious concern.
Or
what happens so damaged them that they're not going to be able to succeed.
We have our baseline data sharing. We're working on expanding our data sharing with AISD, and we're in that situation of trying to determine what is the new baseline. How many kids are no longer on AB Honor Roll? How many no longer have perfect attendance? How many are being held back? Who's going to be in summer school? And so that gap, we're trying to figure out where that baseline is now. And so Barbara and her team, you know, when we meet, you know, that's really what they're talking about, is how are we going to find that baseline and how are we going to close that gap?
Where we have the grades, we've been able to look and see, you know, we looked at all the kids that were had 75 or less and below in math and reading, and then we also looked at those that had failed two or more other subjects and put those numbers together, and we had about 37% of students that fell in that, but that's all AISD students. We have a lot of students at charter schools and other schools that we don't have that information. But we do know, you know, there's a big need, right? Because that, you know, they're either failing or at risk of failing. So, you know, we're working with AISD, we're working with our partners. You know, you saw the CIS study, that the work that they're doing is, you know, bringing the gap from other students and making, you know, where other students were falling further behind, the kids in CIS were making progress, and same thing with Boys and Girls Club, and, you know, we're going to work on the literacy, and we have a grant we're waiting to hear on that would bring some tutoring, and also the school district is supposed to get a lot of money, you know, passed down from the federal government for tutoring. Now, the big challenge will be, who will be the tutors, because all of our partners, all of our educational and community groups, they don't have the people to provide this assistance to our kids. So, and you know, we're short staffed. So all of us are trying to address it with what we have.
It's a people issue.
Yeah.
We really need the people, the hands-on, to provide that assistance.
Right.
Well, we've made the educational ecosystem awful. I mean, it really is awful. They were, you know, our teachers, our schools were so badly treated, and, you know, during the pandemic. You know, Haka has enjoyed kind of, you know, we're sort of an island of stability in an environment that, you know, really is really stressed across the board, and really in the education space. I mean, it's not so easy certainly in healthcare, and it's not so easy in job training, but you know, it's particularly stressed in that education space. And we will I personally believe we will never know the depth of those challenges. I think we're seeing turnover at, I mean, the head of Boys and Girls Clubs announced her resignation too. So I mean, we're seeing a lot of turnover, because I think a lot of people are saying, mm-hmm. we're, you know, this is beyond what we signed up for.
Challenge is too great, or what are they changing?
I think people feel really under-equipped to be able to handle what's here. And you've got a diminishing number of students within AISD, but the student body is more intense. The needs are much more intensive. You know, and so many of our kids need 504 plans and other special accommodations and other issues. And you know, we're only able with Boys and Girls Clubs and communities and schools to sync up. You know, we get a large number of kids, no doubt about it, but it's not every kid, and we're not every kid within that school. We're just a small, you know, some schools we're a large percentage of, but we're not every kid. And the environment, the ecosystem that they're in, you know, is challenging. So
yeah, and the mental health community across the country says it's a crisis with kids with mental health needs. So you pile that on with, you know, having a hard time getting staff. We were talking about the clubs. Mm-hmm. They're not up to the 50 or the 60 kids they used to serve. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if we want the kids to have a quality experience, we don't want them to go into a club that's understaffed, mm-hmm. you know, so it all has to be balanced, so we're getting as many kids as we can, mm-hmm. that caring adults and that support, mm-hmm. But unfortunately those people are hard to find. And we had some work done with our workforce development to have our residents apply for some of those positions and get in, and you know, it was challenging for them to meet the requirements. And we found out yesterday, they said that it's challenging for everybody that's applying to meet the requirements. And there's a reason they have those requirements, right? So the kids can get all the support. So it's like a juggle.
The background check was definitely a challenge.
I think, you know, I want to commend you all for the effort you made during COVID. Because, I mean, it was a challenge. And we reached out and the board appropriated money. And you all spent that wisely to reach as many kids as possible. So I know that, well, you know, there are some who probably fell in the crack and there were issues that we identified with that, but that was a challenge that, you know, society had been facing in quite some time. And so I don't want to make this sound like, you know, oh, this is bad, but I think we made the effort. We tried to address the problem, we tried to tackle the problem, and we did the best we could. And with some, my sense is there are some kids who did excel, there are some kids who didn't fall as far behind, and there are some who just didn't get it because digital learning was just not something, it's not how they're wired. Some people are very visual, they need a lot of, for lack of a bad term, taught in terms of
hand-holding,
a lot of positive reinforcement from a teacher. And they kind of need it. They feel better when the teacher's standing over them, kind of giving them their praise and stuff. So, you know, I think we made the best, we did the best we can. But going back to what I wanted was essentially this, for us to get the data, to be able to read the data, because again, we talked about the three-legged stool, and that's, to me, is the one thing that we haven't gotten. And I'm glad to know that there have been studies, but we'd like to get it so we can have a better understanding of it.
But I guess what I want to emphasize is, it's not that everyone has not done a yeoman's job or tried to really deal with the situation. It's just that the situation is going to continue. We cannot say it will not. And we know that it's going to be intense for at least the next decade.
and we have to buy into that, and we have to continue to try and do, just intensify whatever it is that we're doing if we're going to help this generation get through.
Yeah, I, you know, Catherine, I don't know if you are, there's a group in town, and I forget the name of it, but it's kind of like the futurists. They're always thinking about the future.
Yeah.
What does, because they're saying the hospitals you are building now are not going to be able to serve the population you need to, because by the time you get them finished, they're obsolete because this is different. And I guess in my mind, as bad as people talk about what's happening in education, it may be so, but I just, you know, in my own mind, I'm not sure a four-year college is the end-all, be-all in terms of where people are going. I look at sort of my daughter's generation, and many of those folks, they're, could care less about a college degree because they're into the new gig economy. They can figure out, like I got a niece who has been, should have finished college 10 years ago, but she makes great money and she has a she shed in the backyard, and what she does is she cleans and renovates. She cleans and renovates what I would say high-end sneakers, and there are guys who pay $500 or $300 for a pair of sneakers. They take them to her and she fixes it. And she says, hey, my limit is 50 sneakers per week. And you know what? She makes $7,500 per week. That doesn't take a college education. And so she works on her own time. And then when you got all these folks who are doing social media who are saying, hey, I'll do X number of photo shoots and then I'm going to play. And it's just a, you know, it's a different way of looking at the world. And it's, you know, because when I talk to my nieces and nephews, I was like, I don't know how you're going to be able to sustain that lifestyle, but obviously they'll do something. And probably our parents said something about the same. But I just know thinking about my grandmother, she said, you're never going to get a job with your hair on top of your shoulders. It just is not going to happen. You know, but we're going through this generational change, so, you know, I think we've got to be positive. Things happen for a reason. And maybe, you know, those kids, it forces them into a different lifestyle. And our, you know, our jobs, our work, everything is changing, so. And again, the kids of my daughter's generation, they're far more entrepreneur and creative. And so, again, I struggle with this because I'm just like, hey, you need to go have a college education. You need to have an advanced degree because you need to be thinking about, you know, retirement later.
I've been in education all my life. I don't say any of that. I merely say that you need the foundational skills, most important of which is reading. If you can read, you get flexibility to be able to do many different things. And you can forget the concept of majors. Majors is passé as far as I'm concerned because the world doesn't function that way any longer.
I think that's really...
But if you have the flexibility, if you have the mental flexibility, you can do practically anything. None of us, I bet anybody in this room is not doing what they major in. Is anybody doing what they're major in?
I am.
Well, you're stuck.
Yeah.
And you would be out of it.
No, no.
But seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to understand that, and that's what, 4 years of college, that's crazy. But the main thing, and that's why I'm so concerned about this reading and the basic foundation, is what these kids are missing now. If they had that foundation, I wouldn't be worried. And I'm scared. I truly am scared that they're not getting it, and if they don't get it, then all hope is lost for them.
If I might interject, we have two more slides left and we can open up for questions and answers. I know we're way past time.
Okay.
Okay. We're way past time. Well, we have Daniel who worked so hard on this slide.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that Daniel has enough money.
Well,
Daniel, we haven't even met you.
When you talk about reading, when I was in the governor's office, I worked on a program called Reading to Write. And the whole premise was, if you can read, you can write. Mm. You can't write if you can't read.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
you can't, if you can't read, you can't do math, you can't do, forget STEM, forget any of these things. Mm-hmm. Reading is fundamental.
Okay.
And I want to hear from Daniel.
All right, Daniel. We're ready for you, Daniel.
Thank you, everybody. Yes, I haven't met everybody, but my name is Daniel Ruiz. I'm the Family Opportunity Manager, and I'm also the Resident Council Lead here at Chalmers. Before I even begin, I'm just happy to see so many Hakka faces so late in the afternoon. I think this is a good sign of things to come in the future, especially as we opened up just barely this month. My colleagues have alluded to, so here within Chalmers, resident services are managed by CMS. I think the next couple of slides after mine where they go over all the points, but myself, Bo, Myra, our social work intern, and Ms. Sharon Harris, who's down there at the bottom, we all work in the partner space in the back and help coordinate and bring these services to life for our residents.
Just as a clarifier, while the resident services are managed by CMS, they are contracted to Austin Pathways.
Yes.
Yes.
So the services are actually performed by our Austin Pathways team.
Yes.
Clarifying.
Thank you for clarifying. Yeah, I was looking there. But yeah, one thing that I wanted to highlight was just our monthly resident council meetings. Mary Apicola, our resident commissioner, also serves for the VP, also serves as the vice president for Chalmers as well as citywide. She has been extremely instrumental in bringing residents together. I did note that these meetings did continue even through the pandemic. They were a little rough, they were a little rough. Our meetings, I don't know if it's just me gloating, maybe you could chime in, but our meetings, I think that in my time here, they're really the epitome of bringing people together. We had an issue, but we were worried about maintaining social distance when we did have them in here just because there were so many people. We just make sure to spread out as much as possible. So, in person we range 20 to 30. Virtually, we'd be lucky to have 15 participants. But at the same time, I would like to highlight that I saw people on screen that I would have never thought would be accessing a computer. Mary, I was thinking about our how we worked with Trent with his dissertation and
yes.
connecting people together
right.
and just going from him to where we were during the peak pandemic. I just thought that was, even though our circumstances, I thought that was a great indicator of our progress. Another partner that I would just like to, or one of our partners that I would like to highlight would be Ms. Sharon Harris. She's our Family Elder Care Service Coordinator. She offices in the back partner space as well. She has been instrumental with our residents. She has continued holding, office hours. She's extremely active. She's engaged our residents actually with a couple of classes. One of them was actually taking place during the meeting. Our Aging is Cool class, which just encourages our elderly residents to come out and participate in either mental or even physical exercises together as a community. She also has our Art Sparks classes where, again, our elderly residents come together, come up with some type of arts and crafts, take it home to put up in their home, practice doing it with their children, their grandchildren. So just really want to commend Ms. Sharon Harris, and she's definitely one of our most valued partners here at Chalmers. Next slide, please.
Do they still take shopping trips?
Yes, they do, Barbara. So once a month they take an age trip, and depending on the shopping center. But I think the most popular location is the Walmart off of Ben White. But they go in a van, about 5 to 10 residents. I think they were separating in between properties, so here in Santa Rita. So just a way of not only bringing people together within the Chalmers community, but also the East Side community as a whole. Just wanted to highlight some upcoming future community events. Through Bo, Myra, our Bringing Health Home team, we have partnered with Black Lives Veggies, and they'll be bringing forward gardening and cooking classes here to our residents. We have a few plots in the back area that unfortunately we have yet to use, but hopefully we'll be able to begin using those in the very near future. Also just wanted to highlight the Gonzalo Cycling Initiative. They are a local organization that approached us and wanted to create or wanted to give free bikes to the community. Actually, that second picture. Oh, you know what? I forgot. can you go back to the last slide? I just thought I was explaining the photos. So I'm sorry. I didn't really need to focus on this. So this photo up here. I know it's not. It's kind of can't really see it. But that's actually Mary, and that's all of our community, or all of our all of our residents. This was actually in the old building. So I took this photo. This is probably like my first week on the job, back in 2017, and I can't. I keep on going back to it. I'm like, I just feel old at this point. But this was back at the very, very old building. And so then we took this photo over here too. This was our first meeting back in October of last year. We were granted access due to Carlton. They said we could proceed with having in-person meetings. And so this was our first meeting back here in this space. And it was the first time being back in this space, and just wanted to highlight like just the difference in our circumstance. Although as I mentioned this earlier, although our community has changed and the people have moved out, or unfortunately I do see some of our residents who are no longer here with us, the essence of the community through our resident leaders is still here. I've seen a photo of love. Okay, we can go back to the next slide. I was talking about the Gonzalo Cycling Initiative. They began doing a bike ride from here over off of Chicón to HEB. And the photo over here, the middle photo, is their actual first trip that they took. I believe this was in September. December. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. It was last December, and that's one of the ones that one of the services we talk about what the community wants, and I think this is one of those events. Now that we're in a lower stage of the pandemic, in a much lower stage, they are able to operate, so we'll be working with them to get that going.
Do they need liability insurance?
I'm sorry? Liability? Great question. I think that's with the waiver that they found. another highlight that I wanted to mention was just we have been working with the UT School of Social Work. I'm actually a graduate from the UT School of Social Work, and I was actually able to do my final field placement at the Housing Authority when I did my master's degree under Ms. Tiffany Middleton. So at the time, you know, with Jobs Plus, I would tell Tiffany, I'm like, I feel like there's a lot of social work in the work that we do, and I am actually someone that did use this degree. So we've been able to work with the UT School of Social Work to have an intern. We just had our first intern this past spring semester. She's still working with us. She was unfortunately unable to make it in today due to family circumstances, but that is a partnership that we're hoping to continue as time goes on. We actually just had I'll actually be meeting with our fall intern already next week to begin the process of enrolling, but that's something that I think that would be very beneficial to just have an extra set of eyes, extra set of hands, you know, just helping with the community at large. And the last thing that I wanted to mention was just, we did talk about the home ownership program. So that is a program that we're currently working on. In particular, we're emphasizing on the Rosewood Initiative at Rosewood Course, the 12 single family, the 12 single family townhomes that will be available. We've been working with various residents, just letting them know the opportunity that is available. It's been a bumpy road, I'm not going to lie. It's been bumpy just trying to figure out the best way to market, the best way to speak with, you know, Habitat for Humanity, refer people over. I think after 4.5 months, I think we're in a good position to begin, you know, moving forward. And it's not just Rosewood. I know our goal is to get all 12 homes to be HACA families. I think that's an extremely doable goal based off of the feedback that we're getting right now. But it's not just that, it's also other city community programming as well. So some residents, you know, live out at San Marcos, so if we connect them to the city resources over there. That although there are differences in the type of programming, we just want to be a helpful voice as they go about the steps as they continue their home ownership goal, their goal to become a homeowner. We talked a lot about steps and processes. And so all of this is, we talk in social work, we talk a lot about intersectionality, how everything is interconnected. And so I just want to mention, but my last point is just how all of our services are interconnected to hopefully reach the max level of self-sufficiency. That's different for every household, obviously, but if homeownership is that for a family, then we'd like to be there for them every step of the way. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. These are just for reference. I'm going to go to the super, super fast part. We're going to take this slide on the text.
So we talked about how we have to meet these TDHCA points, and we have one for Chalmers South and one for Chalmers East. This is South, so we have the Boys and Girls Club, we have Goodwill with the Workforce Development, Case Management.
What's the point system, Margaret?
What's that?
The point system.
So we agreed to provide 9 points in the LORA, which is
Land Use Restriction Agreement.
Yeah. So when you apply for tax credits,
right,
you become more competitive if you provide services. So each service, there's a schedule of services, and for different services, you get different point values, and it goes to a scoring mm-hmm. in this competition for tax credits. So the amount of points that we would get is reflected by what's up here. So when TDHCA comes to evaluate to make sure that we actually are doing that work under the land use restriction agreement in place on that property, they're evaluating it because we asked for points for it, and so that's. So you're programming to the points, but we, as we said earlier, we do a lot more.
Right. And that's what I was going to say, just like Suzanne was talking about with the properties that are in AAHC,
yeah.
You know, these are just specific things, but we have all these other programs, all the health programs and everything aren't even on here yet.
Right.
So this is just for Sal, the things that fit the little boxes that they give us. They're very specific.
Also, let me just add this. So when they put together the application to apply for a tax credit,
right.
The legislature has said you get points if you do A, B, C, and D.
Oh, okay.
And so some of it is statutorily derived. Well, actually, it's all of it statutorily derived. And so when we or others put together an application, they've got specific things they need to commit to in order to get certain...
But we are the one who signed the points.
They assign the points, and we decide whether or not we want to provide the service under the points. I would just say the staff team, we've gotten way in the weeds. So if there's a higher level thing that beyond the points that you guys want to focus on, let's talk about that. But the points for the DHC scoring is beyond
the points. Right, can change these as long as it's based on residents' needs.
Okay.
And so, what we agreed to, things have changed.
Okay.
But for instance, this weekday character building program, that's right out of the book. So what does that mean? And we've partnered with Creative Action, but they're staffing shortages, so now we're doing the health science with Health Start Snack Science.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, we have our Mayfest Festival, we have healthcare professionals providing that service, we transport the families to it, so we can count that as
the
I think we can keep it high level.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
That's the last of the slides. Questions and answers, so.
But it's a fair question, because when we applied for funding, we had to build, we talked about building that capital stack, so there were all sorts of conditions for all sorts of things,
right.
Some of which was to provide services.
Yeah.
So the staff, rightly so, the staff team is amazing in making sure that we, because we're going to be evaluating that every year, that we can confirm for TDHCA and for any other funder that we're in fact doing the service that we committed to. And a lot of folks don't do that. And so when and I headed up that agency, it was a big issue. People who were had shell services. What we see here is, not only all those services being done expertly, but then you see even deeper levels of impact on them, because we're trying to do a lot more. But in terms of the scoring numbers and all that stuff, that we can.
Yeah,
well, that's all he's making them.
Yeah.
Well, that's the presentation. So I know we're way past time, but thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much.
So Daniel, let me ask you, who is the dean of the School of Social Work in Virginia?
That's a good question. I'm know the school recently changed.
Wasn't it David Springer? Wasn't he in that team?
Well, the reason why I asked is because when I first got on the board, the UT's School of Social Work made a presentation, and when I read through it, I killed their request. They wanted to do some sort of survey, and it was kind of painful, but it was a way of making a point that we were not just going to do things that people wanted to. Because I had the person who made the presentation read through the first few pages, and I said, all this says UT, but it doesn't say anything about a benefit for the residents. You all want to use it as guinea pigs. So the mere fact that they allowed you and others to do internships here means that they kind of saw the light.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. They've been great in terms of, you know, like us being able to monitor the, like, where we're going to put the intern. You know, we had a vision at the very beginning, and then the vision kind of changed, so we adapted, and luckily they've been extremely supportive. So,
but that was 25 years ago.
I want to give a big shout out. I mean, you guys do amazing work.
And thank you all.
Thank you all for the time. So with that, we were supposed to do a happy hour. We're going to do the happy hour. They went out of business.
And then their business, they're just closed for a period of time figuring out what they're doing next. Eastside Tavern was, apparently they were open on Monday, they're now got sold, they're re-envisioning it, so
they'll be open tomorrow.
With the weather and stuff, I think our thought is, why don't we hold off? But so let me invite all you all to next week. We decided as a staff team to pull everybody together and celebrate just being able to be together. So we're going to next Friday at Bolden Acres, which is down on South Lamar at Old Torp. You each have a flyer. It's next Friday, the 29th. Please come from noon to 3, and we're going to let people just blow off some steam and have a chance to be together. The staff team really hasn't been together in quite some time, so we'd love for you all to come and be part of that.
You got a flyer
in your
hand. I'll fly it in there.
It's called Golden Acres. So please come if you would. And then the other question I wanted to ask you all before we go, just under my thing. Hey guys. The other issue I wanted to ask you all about is in terms of scheduling. So our next board meeting is scheduled for the 19th. I'd like to ask you all, we'd like to do a grand opening here at this site. That at some point that week, we'd like to give maximum flexibility to our public officials. We want to invite the mayor and the other key folks. So I'd like to ask if we'd like to do it potentially the 19th, that morning, that Thursday morning, before the board meeting. That would be ideal. But we'd also like to have the flexibility to offer up to public officials that Friday the 20th or Wednesday the 18th, even Tuesday the 17th. So I've talked to a few folks, but I haven't talked to all of you, and I wanted to make sure. Commissioner Bailey said all four of those days could work for him. Commissioner Abstola said all four of those days could work for her. Commissioner Carrington has indicated that all those days can work for her. So I wonder if Commissioner Ritchie and Commissioner Duncan Hall.
I think right now I'm trying to, maybe we're talking about.
Yes.
I could do either. My preference would be to do it on Thursday or Friday the 20th.
Okay. So Thursday the 19th or Friday the 20th.
How soon will you determine the date? Because I'm trying to set up a lot of doctor appointments to make that I've been putting off.
I'm gonna send a note to the mayor's office tonight or tomorrow, and I'll ask if we could. And they're usually pretty good about turning around in a few days.
Yeah.
But I think we'd really like to make Councilman Renteria and the mayor, the bells of the law. I think those are all the items that we had for you all today. I'm sorry we can't do the happy hour, but we hope you all will be happy. Take extra cookies and the sodas. With that, I think we're ready to adjourn.
All right, so Tyra, before you leave, Tyra. I need to get a motion from you to adjourn.
I'm coming back.
Did you make a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Stolo. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we adjourn exactly at 5 o'clock on Thursday, April 21st.
Okay.
All right.
Somebody had told me.
I love it.
I love it.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye.
So.
Thank you. We'll give you Seth tomorrow. Thanks so much for.
Oh, sure.
Go love on that puppy.
Yes.
Yes.
Welcome.
I might have brought these here. I might bring out the pillow.
La Marina.
How's Max?
La Marina.
Oh, gosh.
He's fine.
I think he's counting the days when he moves out with.
Oh, she's still there? She's
there. I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah,
she's taking her time.